This episode of the A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
I've joked before that, you know, my degree in philosophy and religion allows me to, you know, stay calm and focused as I get mana screwed for the thousandth time. Like, it's like, oh, well, you know, this too shall pass, you know?
Oh, man.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to you by ManaDeprived.com and 60cards.com. Check us out.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
I don't know about you guys, or I'm just mind-tricking myself constantly.
Jay Boosh.
They're of a different culture, KYT. They prefer their magic untainted by the internet.
Scotty.
Then you just pull the fucking Mind Slaver and you just dome them with their own dude. That's entertainment.
And Medina.
I'm on camera and I'm like, oh man, don't blink. Act like you meant to do this.
And now, the A-Team.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 96 of the A-Team Podcast. This is KYT, as always, with Scott, John, and Jay. How's it going, guys?
It's going pretty good. Oh, 96?
Yeah. Woo. Fuck, we're getting long in the teeth, boys.
Getting close to 100.
I know.
Now, before Scott introduces our illustrious guest here, I just want to mention that at the end of the show, I'll be announcing the winner of the Foil Gristle brand from last week's game. Some of the funnier comments that we got, and we got a bunch of them. So that's going to be at the end of the show. So
that means you have to stick around till the end.
Yeah.
I'm sure they will. Right,
yeah.
Scott?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no reason not to stick around. I mean, we've got, as promised, you know, this guest doesn't need a lot of introduction. You know, vaunted, you know, well-known game maker, you know, extremely successful game player, both of the Magic variety, as well as, you know, of the chasing female variety. We have the illustrious... Ladies and gentlemen, and I stress the ladies, Mr. Brian Kibler is joined us for the first time this evening. Brian, welcome to the show, sir.
Hello. How y'all doing?
Pretty awesome, thank you. So, what were you up to before we got you into this call? Were you just kind of streaming around or cooking around a moto or what?
I was actually finishing up some work. We launched our Kickstarter for Soulforge. New project that we're working on, and I was going over some of our updates we're going to be putting up. So, busy.
Nice. So, I want to take a few minutes, and I want to kind of talk a little bit about you, the player, because this is sort of, you know, one of the first major, you know, podcast shows that I think you've ever done, right?
Like, it is, actually. It's the first.
So we're popping the cherry on that one, which is awesome, because you seem to just be really elusive. Like, I know you've done, you know, an interview here and there on site at events and stuff. Like, I you've talked to Joey from UNTG Taps back in the day, you know, that sort of thing. But we're really excited to have you, you know, sort of full bore. So we need to make sure that we give you your proper introduction to our listenership, you know, for those of you that don't actually just ask Kibler anything on his drunk streams. So, first things first, you are, of course, known as the Dragon Master. Your column at Star City Games is the Dragon Master's Lair. You earned that. You want to tell us a story about that? Like, that was your first Pro Tour Top 8, right?
Yeah. So that was Pro Tour Chicago back in 2000. And the world's really changed a lot for those who haven't really been following competitive Magic for all that long. But, way back when, it really used to be that that creatures, and in particular big creatures, didn't really show up in most tournaments. It was really, you know, the decks were Jackalpup decks or Counterspell decks for the most part. And the deck that I played in that tournament was a deck that had, you know, just a bunch of huge creatures, including Rith the Awakener, you know, the dragon, actual dragon in the deck. And I ended up beating both John Finkel and Zvi Mauschwitz in that tournament in the Swiss and in the top 8. with an armadillo cloaked Rift the Awakener. So, you know, in a world where no one plays big creatures, having, you know, not only a gigantic creature, but a gigantic enchanted creature was definitely something that really didn't get seen very much and caught some people's attention.
Because that was terrible card disadvantage. You know,
yeah,
day, like
if it got killed. Well, the thing was, in that tournament, one of the popular decks in that tournament was like a red-green sort of Fires of Yavimaya deck that used Fires of Yavimaya. It's an enchantment that gives things haste, and then Sapperling Burst. You'd make a bunch of guys and, you know, just attack your opponent and kill them. And my deck was, you know, super well set up against those decks because I had just even bigger creatures than they did. And Armadillo Cloak, in particular, made it so that, you know, they couldn't ever really, you know, kill you if you ever put it on something big because just it's a giant life-looking creature. It was like, you know, Baneslayer Angel before there was Baneslayer Angel.
Nice. So you ended up losing to Kai in that semis, right?
I did, yes.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's tough losing to one of the best in the game. I mean, Christ, it's Kai, for God's sakes. So you took a short hiatus, right? Like, from Magic shortly thereafter?
I continued playing for a while, but didn't really make any other top eights, at least in Pro Tours. I did pretty well in Grand Prix, and actually, I actually did, you know, very, very well in Grand Prix then, especially compared to how I've done since I started playing again, and then ended up pretty much stopping playing competitive Magic when I moved out to California to take a game design job.
Gotcha. So you left the game for, obviously, your design job at Upper Deck, right?
Yeah. The funny thing was, a big part of the reason that I took the job at Upper Deck, I'd been asked by Wizards a couple times if I wanted to come and do their sort of development internship there. And I you know, turned it down because I still wanted to play Magic. Then I go and work at Upper Deck and just stop playing Magic.
I'm going to come back to the design piece because that's whole side facet of your personality.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, obviously you did come back to the game. What was it that brought you back? Because I seem to remember, you know, I was not paying, you know, I'm one of those guys who've been in and out of Magic for years, right? So, you know, playing back Revised and all that sort of crap and then, you know, out at Weatherlight or something. So, you know, that whole competitive scene was just a void for me. You know, I get back in and, you know, all of a sudden there's this unbelievable web coverage and everything's just fantastic. And of course, so like Pro Tour Honolulu, Shards is out, and, you know, this shining face, you know, this pretty boy, this not a Magic player guy, you know, has come forward and, oh yeah, no, I'm coming out of retirement. You're like 20, you know, and here I am and I'm just showing up in Honolulu and I'm fucking owning you with commons. Like, how the fuck did all of that come down, man? Like, give us the lowdown. What happened?
How did I start coming? Come back to Magic?
Yeah, and bring you back to Honolulu. It was crazy.
So I was going up to the Pro Tour in LA, and I think that's the Pro Tour that Antoine Ruel won. I think, but I wasn't playing in that Pro Tour. I up with some friends of mine, Pat Sullivan and Ben Seck, who many of your viewers may know. Mm-hmm. We were driving up. And you know, my plan was just to go up and hang out and see people I hadn't seen in years, you know, because I'd been off the Pro Tour for a number of years, but, you know, still a lot of good friends who were going to be at the event. And on the drive up, Pat and Ben were talking about, you know, the deck that Pat was going to play and the LCQ, and, you know, this was around Time Spiral, so they're talking about, like, you know these cards like, you know, Magus of the Scroll and, you know, like all the, you know, Mutavault and all these things that are like really similar to cards that, like, I knew from way back when, you know, because
like Curse Scroll and Mischief's Factory.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just like, you know, as we're sort of driving up, I'm just like, I wonder if I can borrow the cards to build this deck. Cause I didn't know anything about, you know, the format. I hadn't played Magic in years. But by the time I got there, I was like going around, like, you know, talking to people. I ended up borrowing a bunch of cards from Jamie Park, and, you know, put together this deck. Went like 4-2 in the LCQ there, and, you know, just totally hit the fire back. I was like, you know, I was watching like the PTQ going on, and I'd never seen a Lorwyn card before, and I was like, you know, asking people, you know, what the cards were legal, and like built this like 4-color like Doran command deck or whatever that I ended up playing in the PTQ on like Sunday or something, and went 4-2 in that as well. And I'm like, all right, you know, I want when's the next tournament I can play, and I want to keep playing this. But, you know, I just missed it so much, you know.
Yeah.
And it went from there to just, you know, I started playing in some of the local, like, San Diego area PTQs, and then ultimately ended up winning one. It was a while before I won one because I played in a bunch of them, and I was still super rusty. You know, I ended up making a bunch of, you know, game and match losing mistakes playing in the top 8 to some of these events. And then, you know, ended up winning a PTQ that I actually drove out to in Las Vegas by myself.
Nice.
I was just like, you know, I'm going to this PTQ. I'm going to go win this PTQ. And I won, which qualified me for Honolulu. And then, you know, I made top eight in Honolulu and, you know, sort of went from there.
Yeah. So your deck in Honolulu was awesome. Like, it just was completely under the radar, came out of nowhere, and, you know, just was so impressive to just look at on paper and go, fuck, really? I can build this for like $30, you know?
Earl the Miststalker, the like three color, you know, untargetable guy or whatever, he was selling for like $25 or something at the venue. I traded two Earls for my deck.
Nice.
I played an artifact Esper deck, like an aggressive, you know, we call it the Esper Stoneblade deck because it was Esper Stormblades and, you know, just a bunch of aggressive creatures. It had like Aether Sworn Canonist, which was super good against all the Jund decks with Cascade. You know, just a bunch of, you know, border posts and stuff for your mana. You know, just all these super aggressive cards. It actually, it was the first competitive deck to actually use Thopter Foundry.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually, because the M10 rules came shortly after Honolulu, actually, on my, like, I heard about them when I was flying back, and we were like, oh, this is the last time Thopter's Foundry will ever see competitive play, because there's no damage in the sack anymore. Well, then Sword of the Meek sort of
happened. Yeah.
I guess you're wrong about that.
Ruined Extended for the rest of us. Thanks, guys.
I like that Extended.
So, you know, since your return at Honolulu, right, like, you've been sort of at the front of some unreal fucking deck innovations. Right, like that was a crazy deck that you guys came up with out in Honolulu. Took everyone by storm.
Well, the Honolulu deck was actually, that was pretty much all. It wasn't me at all. That was pretty much all Neil Reeves, I think.
Oh, was it?
We actually, yeah. I mean, I basically came to, you know, that tournament. You know, I'd been testing a bunch with Ben Rubin coming into that event, but we were, you know, we basically had a bunch of different Jund decks like everyone else did.
Mm.
And we showed up to Honolulu. We were staying in a beach house with a bunch of people, including Gabe Nassif. And Mark Herberholtz, you know, this whole
crowd.
What
happened to Gabe Nassif?
He just plays poker now. He just plays poker. He's really good at it and apparently likes it more than Magic. So
really?
Well,
there's certainly a lot more money to make in poker than there is
in Magic. Of
course,
yeah.
He got inducted the same year that you did, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah.
And he just figured that's it?
He still occasionally comes to events. He was in Barcelona.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, he doesn't really test or travel for events anymore.
Hmm. Now, to be fair, like, it's Gabriel Nassif we're talking about here, right?
It is.
Yeah. Testing for events. You give him a blue control deck. Like, how bad is this going to be, right? Anyways. Okay. So, talk to us about Kago. Like, I feel like this is so a soft spot for KYT, right? Because, like, yeah. He has played that deck and all of its iterations and you know, evolutions since then. And in every format that it's ever been legal, period. But basically, like, did the so I have to ask how this ties into the Blame Kibler meme, because did you start this? Like, is this when that came up, or was that before this?
It's actually totally unrelated to that. It was before that. Yeah. The whole Blame Kibler thing. Well, I'll start with that. The whole Blame Kibler thing was actually it came out of Michelle Cove. Who is one of the people who runs Gaming Etc., one of the dealers that is frequently at Pro Tour events. I've known her for a long time. She was the one who makes the Blaine Kibler t-shirts that you see around. And so there's a bunch of stuff that sort of, you know, goes back to, but at Nationals in, I think it was Minneapolis or Kansas City, somewhere. I think it was Kansas City. This is right after I made top eight in Honolulu, played in Nationals, and I ended up making a couple big mistakes toward the end of the first day, which picked me up a couple of losses that, you know, I was kind of frustrated about. So I decided, you know, I was going to go out drinking, and I ran into one of her employees and, you know, a friend outside, and I was like, hey, let's go out, let's go drinking. They're like, oh no, we got to. You know, we got to work in the morning, and I'm like, you know, I pulled a die from my pocket. I'm like, high roll. If I win, we go out drinking. If you win, you stay. Like, okay, I win the roll, and we go out and just are high rolling for drinks all night. And every time they're like, oh, let's go, whatever. I'm like, oh, I'll roll you. If you beat me, you can leave. And you know, I beat them in all these die rolls. So they come back completely. And I come back, you know, pretty bad shape myself. Do terribly on day two. Michelle walks in and sees the two of them just like, you know, leaning up, you know, horribly hungover against a wall or whatever. She's like, "What happened to you?" They're like, "Oh, it's Kibler's fault, blah, blah, blah." And that's part one of this. There's part two. Part two of this is that it's a Pro Tour in Austin. For many tournaments since I started playing again, because I've known Michelle for a long time, I knew her from when I lived up in New England. I was borrowing cards from her booth to play in events. I bought like my first deck back when I was playing again. And in Austin, I had gotten a message from my friend Chris, who works for Strike Zone. He's like, "Hey, let me know if you need anything. You know, just you know to make sure we have all the cards you need for the tournament because this is extended." And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." And ended up borrowing my whole deck from him. And then, I ended up making top 8 of the tournament. Well, Michelle's birthday was that weekend, and no one wanted to go out with her for her birthday because they wanted to wake up early to watch me play in the top 8.
No.
And then I won the tournament.
Yeah, and like you won that Pro Tour, yeah.
And I was like, I want to keep my deck, so I just bought the entire deck. And this was like the one tournament that I didn't borrow the deck from her store. And they'd had like a really bad weekend of sales, so she was like already annoyed about that. And she's like, "What the hell? Everything's Kibler's fault." So that's where the whole blame Kibler comes from.
All right.
And it sort of expanded to various other things, however people, you know, manipulate it from there.
So one of the ones that you've obviously earned then has got to be Cobblade, right? Like that whole menace started from your Kago deck. Like, how does it feel to be known for such a, you know, prolific thing like that? I mean, aside from in the community, right? I mean, we all know, you know, you've won all of these tournaments and you're an accomplished writer and, you know, you're a fantastic game designer. But like, to be known for that menace.
Well, it's sort of funny because I end up getting, you know, so much. Probably, you know, so much more credit for a lot of things that you know I'm not necessarily the sole sort of progenitor of. I was actually just joking about this with my friend John. John Firlo is one of the sort of core members of our team that makes Ascension, makes Soulforge. You know, and so many people call like, you know, Ascension like, you know, Kibler's game or whatever. When like of, you know, me, Justin, and John, you know, I'm probably the person who had the least to do with the production of it. But
does that annoy your coworkers?
Probably, I mean, no end, right?
Well, I mean, like, not really. You know, we sort of joke about it and stuff. And you know, they were joking initially that, you know, we should just call the company Kibler Games because everyone's going to say it's my game anyway.
Because I never heard of these other dudes, you know. it's hard to not associate it with you, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm certainly the most visible person, at least in the Magic community, of our team. So, you know, there's going to be the obvious sort of associations with me rather than people that they haven't heard of.
So you're saying that they hired you for your face?
I mean, there was a reason I have the credit Minister of Propaganda in the rulebook, and it's not just a vanity title. but with the whole you know Kago Cobblade thing, the origin of the Kago deck was actually Brad Nelson played against, I think it was Akira Asahara on Modo. A few days before Worlds in where was that, Chiba, and he played against him, and he was playing this, you know, weird sort of blue white control deck that had like Trinket Mage for Elixir, but it also just had Squadron Hawks, and Brad was really impressed with the Squadron Hawks, so he was like, you know, we should work on this deck. So Brad and I worked on the, you know, Kago, and you know found a version that we liked for Worlds, and I went 6-0 with it at Worlds.
Yeah,
but I mean, the origin of, you know, playing Squadron Hawks in blue white control didn't come from me. You know, it came from, you know, the Japanese player who Brad had played against on Magic Online. Then I got it through Brad, and I happened to be the one who did well with it. And you know, like I was the one who sort of championed it after that fact because, you know, mm-hmm. I thought the deck was really good, having played with it a lot and sort of did a lot of tuning to improve it. But you know, I certainly can't take credit for the origin of
it. All right,
Paris. You know, I was again sort of championing Kago. And I had been suggesting that we should play Stoneforges and Swords in our sideboard because they're really good against control decks. Raptor, Josh Ardalian, he was like, that does sound really good. I want to try it out in the main deck. And as soon as we you know, first Stoneforge Mystic for a Sword of Feast and Famine and connected with it, we were like, holy shit, this is insane. And that's sort of where the deck came from. You know, it really was like, you know, as soon as someone actually experienced what that was like, You know, their opponents just like look of utter horror and helplessness as they discarded all of their cards, being hit by a, you know, whatever it was, as just all your lands were untapped. So I mean, like, you know, obviously I was one of, you know, the sort of the people who was instrumental in the development and creation of that. But you know, like as I was saying, you know, I end up getting a lot more credit, and a lot of people who are sort of you know, also had a big role in it, you know, don't really get nearly as much credit because their name isn't out there so much.
All right, so I have a I have a quick question actually regarding one of those crazy moments that you've experienced in the game that we all kind of had the capacity to share alongside of you, you know, with all of the innovations that have been made in coverage. So, sure. Like, what exactly went through your head in the exact moment that John didn't block?
Well, I was so sure that I had lost that game. And, you know, I was just like, okay, well, you know, I wasn't so sure because I figured he probably had something to stop one of my Galvanic Blasts. And when I drew the third Galvanic Blast, you know, I was just like, you know, oh, well, maybe I could actually win this game because I was so far behind. And then when he didn't block, I was like, all right, well, you know, that just means that that's even safer for me to go for it. And then, you know, when my third Galvanic Blast resolved, I was like, that really just happened. Like, you know, especially when I sort of look at and like recreate what would have happened in the game when he put down his hand, I was like, why didn't you block? I'm just like, I don't, you know, it was pretty baffling, especially because it's John.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like I'm just playing against some, you know, random person who happened to, you know, make top eight or whatever. Like, this is John fucking Finkel. You know, like he's the person who, you know, back in the day people used to talk about, you know, the FFF, the Finkel fear factor.
Yeah.
You know, there was a story about when he was playing against someone, and this is a real story. I think it was in Worlds one year, and Finkel had Wandering Eye in play, which so both players like have to play with their hands face up. John's opponent like drew a card, and John was just like, yes, you know, like making this like excited sort of reaction to the card. And the card actually lets his opponent win the game, but he was so convinced that John's sort of little celebration meant that, oh, well, John knows I can't win now, that he just conceded.
What?
Like that was the degree to which, you know, John had like this sort of sway over people just by, you know, the mere fact of being him. And, you know, this is the same person who didn't block and let me win the Pro Tour. So it was pretty sweet, to say the least.
So like in that moment, aside from the fact that you knew you had like the trip Galvanic Blast, like are you looking at him going like, did you have that moment where you go, fuck me, I'm dead. Like he's totally got it.
I didn't just have it that once. I had it twice. I had it the game before when I had to draw the whip flare.
You know? Yeah, that's true.
I was just like, oh, shit, I guess third place is pretty good. Then it's like, oh, we'll beat you.
Did you give him shit for that after?
No, I mean, in that sort of situation, there are so many things going through your head that it's very easy to make a slight miscalculation. Like, he thought he was playing around Inferno Titan. And the chances that I have one of my Inferno Titans is substantially higher than me having three Galvanic Blasts. But the way that it actually works out, if you work through all of the possibilities, that even if I have Inferno Titan, he can mana leak it to tap me out and then just kill me in the next turn. So, you know, Inferno Titan doesn't end up doing it, and he had sort of convinced himself that he needed to play this way because of Inferno Titan, to make sure he still had lethal. But you know, he could have still managed to maneuver in such a way that he kills me anyway. So he had sort of locked himself into a line of play and just didn't get out of it. I mean, that happens to me too. So I mean, like, you know, it's clearly not something that I'm gonna give him shit about.
So is that sort of how you account for, I don't know, you're showing a GP Columbus, for example? I'm just trolling you. You didn't do so well.
No, I did badly at GP Columbus. I mean, I felt like I got pretty unlucky there, though I did also make a couple mistakes. So
okay, quick segue question: if you had a choice and you could play one format forever, like is it constructed or limited, and which one?
I'd rather play constructed by a lot. Lots of pro players really like limited because I think mostly because they're lazy.
Okay, suck on that, lazy pros.
Seriously, though. Like, Most people, when you talk to them, they're like, you know, they don't like playtesting for constructed because they feel like it feels like work. Whereas like playing a new draft every time seems more fun to them than just like grinding out a matchup or whatever. And I understand that, but like I find the problem solving element of building decks and sort of metagaming and constructed to be the part of Magic that I find most enjoyable. So, you know, I certainly would rather be constantly trying to find these new solutions than, you know, just drafting all the time.
That totally shows through as well in a lot of the deck choices that you make and how well you commit to those choices, right? Like, it's not very often that we'll see you playing, you know, the default best deck unless it is leaps and bounds, you know, the best deck that is just doesn't have any other solution. Like, I look at Cobblade, for example, right? But
I played Blue-Black Infect during Cobblade.
I guess there's that too, right? Like, yeah, that's true.
That wasn't necessarily because I thought it was better. That was because I was just, like, you know, trying to find solutions. So. Yeah.
But, I mean, like, your love of investment in Daybreak Ranger is well documented. So, okay, so ultimately
yeah,
people...
Yeah, what a mistake that was.
Not like Delver is, like, clearly the best card. Okay, so obviously people make the game, right? Like, I mean, you came back to the game for people. You came back to try to win your shot at the Hall of Fame, right? Who are some of your favorite people that you realize you missed the most coming back to this game? Or that are your favorite people today that you've met through this?
Ben Rubin's probably the person who sort of had the most influence on me, sort of in my earlier time in the Pro Tour. We worked together a lot, like both before I started playing again and after I started playing again. You know, Ben and I sort of tested pretty much solo together for a lot of events. And you know, it's a bummer to me that he's not playing anymore because he's down in Curacao. But you know, he was definitely he lived in San Diego too, which is actually really interesting because when I started playing, when I played with him before, he lived in California and I lived out in the East Coast. And then I actually was able to, like, you know, test with him in person more, which is also really cool. A lot of people who I, you know, had been really good friends with years ago when I started playing or when I was playing really don't play that much anymore. And, you know, it's sort of a bummer. Like, you know, it's great that John's back because, you know, I've known John for years and years and years. That's John Finkel.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about me.
Well... And like Bob Maher, you know, used to hang out with him a lot at tournaments and everything. And now I pretty much, you know, see him at conventions doing business stuff because, you know, he owns distribution company and we do business with them. Yeah. I mean, nowadays, you know, I really like hanging out with like LSV, Dave Williams. Dave's been a friend of mine since we were like 15 too.
Nice.
So, I mean, like Magic just has such a broad, you know, scope of just like awesome people. I mean, pretty much all of my best friends I've originally, you know, met through Magic. All the people who I work with now I met through Magic.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't really know, you know, what the hell I'd be doing if it weren't for Magic.
So you obviously are writing for Star City Games, and as soon as you came back, that seems to be sort of where you settled, you know, with your premium gig. And yet you work with all of Channel Fireball as far as testing team goes. Now, I know that, you know, before Star City Games put out their whole blue-black, you know, team split, and, you know, everybody was working as one team, you know, here in the States, but, you know, with the odd Juza and stuff like that thrown in. But, like, even now, Star City Games put out their blue and black teams, you're still playing with the Fireball guys. Is there... you know, maybe something going on? Like, I mean, are you riding out a contract here? Or, like, what's going on?
The group that I test with really has no association with, you know, the website I write for. I mean, it's a lot of people see the, you know, the t-shirts and whatnot and, you know, sort of make those associations. You know, I mean, I wear a Star City shirt when I'm playing despite, you know, the fact that I'm working with most of the Channel Fireball guys. And, I mean, it's really as far as the writing and sponsorship stuff goes, it's really just a business decision. You know, I'm sticking with, you know, Star City. They've been really good to me. And you know, Pete's great, and they're, you know, they treat all their writers or at least me. I can't actually speak for all the writers. I mean, I don't want to, you know, make sort of, like, a claim that someone might dispute, but you know, they've been great to me over the years. And I mean, really, ultimately, what it was is that. When, you know, I had been just testing with Ben Rubin when I started playing again on the Pro Tour, and you know, when we got to Honolulu, you know, we started collaborating with the people who we were staying with in the beach house.
Yeah.
And then for Austin, you know, we had a similar sort of situation. I was testing a bunch with Ben in person beforehand, and then met up and was testing with the people who we were staying with, just like Chapin, MJ, Sperling, Reitzel, etc. Yeah. And then basically once Ben moved, I just didn't have anyone to play with, and I, you know, was sort of reached out to Luis, you know, wanting to have a group to test with.
Yeah, you guys all lived fairly close at that point, right? Like, I mean, it's all California.
Well, I mean, I live in SoCal. They live in NorCal. So right. You know, it's there's a pretty pretty substantial, you know, distance between us. But you know, I was grilling in Reitzel and had worked with them for, you know, previous events. And they were, you know, they had been working with the Channel Fireball guys. You know, we were successful and, you know, continued to test together. Recently, you know, particularly in Barcelona, you know, that sort of has fallen apart a little bit. You know, there were some sort of questions about, you know, what the future of the team was going to be. But, you know, right now I don't really have any plans to change anything.
Okay. We've talked to some of the members from Channel Fireball. We've had actually quite a few of them here on the show. So, you know, most notably, you know, Tom Martell, you know, and Owen.
Tom Martell, jeez.
Paulo would probably be most notably, right?
Paulo, right?
Oh, Paulo's less notable than Tom Martell.
So, you know, but like we've had, you know, the opportunity to kind of get, you know, occasional glimpses sort of into some of the testing windows, and almost all of them have unanimously hailed you as being an excellent villain during the testing process. So, like, would you sort of agree with that? Like,
an excellent villain?
Yeah. So, like, playing the villain deck. Like, here's all of our brews, and we're just going to play against the villain deck, and you're, you know, grinding the Jun deck or grinding or whatever. And they say that you play an excellent villain in the testing role.
Were they talking about someone who's not me? Because that doesn't sound like something anyone
did. Really?
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm like typically, you know, one of the people who's constantly, you know, trying to, you know, tweak new decks, try new things. And you know, I mean, I certainly will play, you know, the sort of enemy from time to time, but I don't think that's generally my role in testing.
Okay, so that's good.
So you're calling them all liars then?
Yeah,
I'm saying that maybe they were talking about, for instance, David Ochoa or someone, because if I were to, you know, describe someone who I think, you know, sort of is the you know, ultimate villain of the sort of Fireball testing, it's got to be Webb, because he ends up, you know, sort of being the pilot for Delver or whatever it is more often than not.
Okay.
Now what would you describe yourself as, since you're definitely not the villain?
Well, I'm the hero.
The hero.
Sure.
No, well, there's only room for one hero.
There's only one for one hero on this show.
And that's me, bro.
Yeah. but no, that's actually a really good question, John. Like, so there's the brewer, there's the tuner, and then there's, you know, the villains. You are more of a brewer than a tuner, you'd say?
I mean, I would say that, you know, I do both of those things. Basically, you know, I'm constantly looking for, you know, ways to sort of tweak any given matchup. Not necessarily just look for, you know, sort of a big new idea. You know, I would say, as far as like brewers, like the way when I sort of think of brewers, you know, someone who's like trying to find, you know, specific sort of off the radar things to get to work or whatever. Like, you know, like Conley, for example, ends up brewing up a lot of decks because, you know, that's sort of what he likes to do. He's like looking to find sort of off, you know, off the radar things and build around them. And I'm mostly just looking to target what I think are sort of the weaknesses in the metagame, and, you know, figure out the ways to sort of exploit the consistent sort of failings that all the top decks have.
Okay, that's fair. All right, so I have two ways to go here at this point. And you know what? I'm going to let Jay decide sort of where we go next. How's that sound? So I can talk about your game design, and we can talk about, you know, Ascension and Soulforge and all that stuff. Or we can talk about your streaming, which leads into your drunk streaming, which leads into hearing the story from your perspective about Kyoto with the girl that was eating your face.
Oh, God.
So
that wasn't really much of a story so much as just like a photo catalog that Tom
Yeah, pictures tells a thousand.
That really isn't much of a story. I hate to disappoint.
No, that's fair. But
we'll get back to that. I mean, come on, we're not gonna let you off the hook that easy.
Yeah. All right. So Jay, what do you want to hear about from Brian here?
Oh, it doesn't matter. Whatever Brian wants to talk about.
I want to hear about Soulforge because all this Pro Tour talk is just boring as shit. All
right, sure, let's go. All right, so you obviously you went to Upper Deck. You worked on both Chaotic and World of Warcraft.
Well, at Upper Deck, I first worked on Versus System.
Right.
I actually originally got a job offer from Upper Deck after I won the first Versus System Pro.
I was going to say, was that before or after you won the 40K for that, right?
That was afterwards. It was actually, yeah, okay. Ben Rubin was actually working at Upper Deck and just sort of messaged me on AIM one night. It was like, you know, hey, buddy, want to come make games? And I was like, sure.
Nice. Okay, so you were doing that. Now, obviously Ascension is like an entirely different demon, right? Mm-hmm. Like it has just exploded within the Magic population.
Absolutely.
and beyond. I mean, it's been so successful. You obviously it spawned a full expansion. You know, you've expanded into iPad and iPhone. Like this is crazy. Like this is a whole phenomenon. Like, how did this come about? And how proud are you? Really? Like this is crazy.
Ascension's great. I mean, it's you know as I was mentioning before. You know, the main credit for Ascension really goes to Justin Gary and John Firillo. It was Justin's baby from the beginning. Basically, me and Justin and John had all worked together at Upper Deck. Justin was the lead designer of the WoW Minis game, which was you know the unfortunately short lived WoW Minis game when it came to when it sort of fell off the radar when Upper Deck lost the WoW licenses, etc. But he left Upper Deck to found his own company because he was sick of being at Upper Deck. Basically, it wasn't exactly the best place to work for various reasons. And then, it basically was recruited John to also leave Upper Deck, come work with him. And then, I ended up going to work with them as well, probably, I want to say 6 months later or so. And at that point, Justin had been working on Ascension for a while, sort of. It was, a game that he had designed, in the vein of Dominion. For anyone who's, familiar with the deck building genre, it was basically created by Dominion. And more or less, Ascension was Justin's attempt to make a game in using the shell of Dominion that without all of what he and many people sort of perceive as the flaws of Dominion. A lot of things that make the game a lot less sort of accessible to the average player, and really a lot less fun, in at least my opinion and sort of our collective opinion among us, those who work in the game. And it was just totally self-funded, self-published. We put it out, and got such an awesome reception that we were able to make an expansion, then make another expansion, then this company contacted us wanting to make the game on iPhone or iPad, and we're like, awesome, that sounds great. So it's really just sort of continued from there and gotten more and more popular, and we're super thrilled about it because we love the game, and it's a blast to work on and keep making new sets for and everything. And it's afforded us a lot of opportunities as well, because the sort of the recognition and that we've gotten as a result of having a game that successful on sort of multiple platforms has given us a lot of other opportunities.
So chief among those, obviously, aside from your early success on the tour and your experience and friendships that you cultivated, like Mike Turian and those sorts of guys that are all working at WotC, and of course Richard Garfield, which. Mm-hmm. That I guess in conjunction with your wild success with Ascension looks like it's spawning something really exciting.
So we actually as I alluded to at the beginning, or actually as I said it rather than alluding to it, we actually just announced our new game called Soulforge. It's a digital collectible game, so basically the equivalent of something like Magic Online, but usable on mobile devices. So for everyone who's ever complained that they can't play like Magic Online on their iPad or iPhone, it's like, well, Soulforge is basically going to be what you're looking for. And we have a Kickstarter that's currently up because while we have been very successful making Ascension and some, a lot of our other design projects, we're still a very small company. As we say in the in our Kickstarter video, we literally still work out of my living room. So. It's a pretty ambitious project, and we're looking to try and get some help funding it via Kickstarter. So
nice. So what else can you share with us about the game or the concept?
A lot actually.
Yeah,
we've now pretty much announced everything. So it's funny because this has been the, really sort of the big exciting thing that I've been working on for the past year, and I've alluded to it a few times, in various conversations and things, and I've just wanted to talk about it. And especially as it's gotten closer and closer, I've wanted to be able to talk about it a lot. So it's great to actually be able to discuss specifics about it because, I've been super excited about it for a long time. But basically it's a game that's specifically designed to be played, digitally and mobily. A game like, again, sort of like Magic Online to make a comparison. Magic Online isn't a game that's really made to be played on a computer or on a mobile device at all. It has a ton of baggage that is associated with the fact that it's Magic, that's a game that's meant to be played with paper cards. You know, all the things like priority passes and, you know, all the various like little timing things that you need to be able to do that are really obnoxious to do in the computer, that, you know, if the game were specifically designed for, you know, to be a digital game, you know, these just wouldn't be things that you did. We actually started working on a digital game concept years ago at Upper Deck. So I thought about, you know, that really got shelved and never happened. So I thought about, you know, the important elements of having a successful digital game a lot. And the sort of things, you know, okay, well, if I were to make a physical game versus a digital game, like, what would I do? And one of the cool things in Soulforge, the core mechanic of the game is that cards transform. And the fact that you aren't actually playing with physical cards, you're using these sort of these you know, digital representations that, you know, can do whatever they want because they're not, you know, a physical piece of paper that you have to shuffle into a deck. So when you play a card in Soulforge, the basic mechanic, let me sort of break it down from the beginning. Each player has a deck of 40 cards, and at each turn, each player draws 5 cards. So sort of like in Ascension, you know, you'll draw 5 cards a turn. In this game, you play 2 of them a turn. So you'll have a hand of 5 cards, and you can choose and play 2 of them, and the rest go to your discard pile. Every turn, you're drawing 5 cards and playing 2, and every 4 turns, you reshuffle your deck, and you draw again from the new pile. And the reason you do that is, so say I play a level 1 of this dragon card, which is a dragon egg. And then, you know, it'll put a dragon into play, and then later on I'll reshuffle, and the next time I draw it, it'll be a dragon whelp. So this is the sort of thing that you can't really do with physical cards, because, you know, the actual card as it gets after it's shuffled into your deck is something different. So we found a bunch of different things like that have been ways that, you know, we can sort of exploit the fact that we don't really need to play with paper anymore.
But that also means you'll never get to play it with paper, though, right?
We're not making a physical version of
Who
this
game. Cares? The future is now.
Yeah.
I mean, shut up, Medina.
I mean, obviously, you know, I've played Magic for years. I love, you know, playing Magic and you know, have obviously with my sort of obsessive compulsive shuffling, I like the tactile sensation of cards in my hand.
I'm coming to that later, by the way.
But you know, this it lets us do so many cool things. Like, imagine if in Magic you can have a card that was guaranteed to be in the top 10 cards in your deck every game. You know, say it was a keyword like reliable. You know, you can't do that in a physical game without some sort of, you know, ridiculous, like, weird, okay, you set this aside, now you shuffle your deck, now you roll a die. And but in this game, you could just do that. Cards like Illusionary Mask in Magic that, you know, like, you, okay, well, this is supposed to be secret, but it can't really be secret because the game has to be able to track this. You basically need third-party arbitration. You can do that in a digital game. You can have stealth. You can have, you know, also, you can have, like, traps that go in particular places that your opponent doesn't know about. Like, all these things are things that you can do in a digital game that if you had a physical, you know, version of that game that you had to try and figure out how you were going to handle them, you wouldn't be able to do. So, you know, we're really using the digital space as best we can and sort of taking advantage of all these really cool things that we can do that wouldn't be possible with a physical game.
Wow.
Blew my mind. Just blew my mind. So when you've released all this information about the Soulforge, I haven't looked at any of it, I'll be honest. I mean, you're just kind of piquing my you're piquing my interest right now, I'll tell you the truth.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, so, I have to be honest as well and say that I really was like before. And now I'm like, ooh.
So I've played a lot of Ascension on the iPad. That's actually pretty much the only place I actually play Ascension is where I learned how to play. And I love it. So when can we get this game?
Right now, we are in the we have like physical prototypes of the game. We've done a lot of the initial some of the initial programming for a demo that we're going to have at Gen Con. So we're going to have a playable demo at Gen Con and at PAX Prime in Seattle. But the game itself, is sort of off in terms of actually being, you know, fully programmed. We have, you know, these bits and pieces that we're able to show, you know, that of these specific vertical slices of the game. But, you know, we are, I mean, the reason that we're on Kickstarter is because, you know, we need to be able to raise the resources to actually get this game programmed. You know, we are game designers. We're not programmers. And we're looking to the community to help make that happen.
So in addition to, you know, all of the fantastic access that we're going to have to the game, you guys have also kind of thrown out some rewards as well, like for people that pledge certain thresholds?
So that's, I mean, that's pretty much the way Kickstarter works. Kickstarter is a crowdfunding site where people can contribute some amount of money to make a project happen. And they get some sort of reward based on, you know, what they contribute. We have, you know, at our lower levels of contribution, we have things like, you know, you get access to our beta, so you'll be able to play the game, you know, before anyone else. You'll have, you know, access to our sort of backer only forums where you get like advanced information, et cetera, as well as, you know, things like, you know, like free cards when you start up the game, you know, various like forum avatars, whatever. And at our $100 donation level, which I think is probably our best deal, you get a bunch of free stuff in addition to just $100 worth of store credit in our game when it goes live. So, you know, if you plan on checking out the game pretty much at all, you know, that's a level of contribution that, you know, you get your money back and more. Then we have various cool, you know, super cool rewards for people who you know, want to donate bigger amounts. At $1,000, we have you can become a card in the game. We'll commission art of you and add it to our world.
Oh is man, that, I'm doing that
is
shit.
Is that realistic?
there's a lot of buzz too. Like apparently there's some movements to get Christine Sprankle into the game.
She was talking about starting a Kickstarter to fund, you know, our Kickstarter. It's like, yeah, Kickception or whatever. Like the Kickstarter to fund the Kickstarter to fund the Kickstarter.
Tell me
and then
more
we'll
about
use that
me
Kickstarter
being
money
a card.
To buy Kickstarter.
So tell me more about getting this card, right? Like if I want to be a card in your game. Mm-hmm. I pay $1,000, right? Mm-hmm. And then how do I get to, what do I tell you, like anything, or do you just
don't make me fat?
Well, I mean, like basically the and all of these things, by the way, include every sort of donation level above it. So it's like if you donate $1,000, you get like everything, you know, the 500, 250, 100 level, all these things as well. But if you donate for that one, you get to send us an image that we'll send to our artists, and they will make you into a card, and we'll certainly take requests of, like, you know, what kind of character you want to be, what faction, whatever, and you know, you'll get a chance to see the art before it's actually on a card, and you know, I'm sure that if something comes back horrible, that, you know, we would fix it, but no sort of void mage prodigy for Kai sort of things going on, but. But yeah, so I mean, like, we want this to be something that people, you know, feel really good about, and they think it's really cool that they get for donating. So,
oh, that sounds awesome,
John. You have to be the single top donator.
Yeah, see, I don't know if you're aware of this. So there's some really sweet ones when you really get up there. See,
as you go up there at 2,500, we have like a reward where people can have dinner with our team and Richard Garfield at Gen Con next year. Then at $3,500, there's actually a level where you get magic lessons with me.
So if anyone was ever wondering, okay, if Brian Kibler as an escort had a price, it's about $3,500.
Well, it's actually you get every level below that, so it's 1,000 from that. So if you want to, you know, sort of count it directly as that, yeah, you know, sure, whatever. You can buy me for $3,500. Go for it.
There you go. So.
But then at the 5,000 level. Well, you get to fly out here and design cards with us for one of the upcoming expansions. And then the 10,000 level is that we will make you into a major character in our storyline for Soulforge. So, you know, you'd be basically a character that other players would interact with over the course of the story. That would be, you know, character fashioned after you and everything, or someone you want. And then our number one top donator gets to be a character in every game we ever make, including Soulforge, Ascension, and everything that we do in the future.
Come on, John.
I think it's a little too rich for my blood, man. It's too rich. I mean,
like
immortalized
that's...
forever in everything.
Like,
I'm already immortalized.
Gonna... Like, that's not going to be David Williams by the time we're done here, right? Like, seriously?
Yeah, I'm not going to battle David Williams.
No. Now, in all fairness, though, did you see The Rock that he just got engaged with?
Oh. No, I didn't.
Holy crap. That thing could, like, sink a ship. It's huge.
I don't pay attention to stuff like that. I'm a guy.
Yeah. Well, he posted it on Twitter, and you got to give him the congrats, right?
Like, I don't know if you've met Scotty Mac before, but he's a traditional guy, which is to say that he is a modern woman.
Oh, man. Wow. So, yeah, I would like to I'd like to promote this by Twittering about it. Soulforge. I so much want to click on the play button. So wait, it's Sunforge or Soulforge?
Soulforge, S-O-L. But I mean soul as in like, you know, the soul for sun.
Okay, cool.
Not soul as in like, you know, someone's spirit or whatever.
So speaking of spirits and souls, this has nothing to do with that. The question that I have, and this is probably a question like a lot of our listeners have. So you're a game designer, right?
That's true.
How do you get to be that?
Well, we've actually sort of we're discussing a while ago. It's like, oh, well, what would you describe your job? It's like, well, my job is pretty much sit around and go, you know what would be sweet? And it's like people are, you know, everyone else's job is to say, yeah, either, yeah, that would be sweet, or no, man, that sucks. That's basically what I do all day. But I mean, pretty much how I personally got into game design. You know, as I was saying before, you know, I was basically noticed as a competitive Magic player, and you know, that's one of the best ways, at least in the sort of the TCG community, to get into game design. Not necessarily as a competitive player, but as someone who is a, you know, community. I mean, we've seen you know, Gavin Verhey, Sam Stoddard, you know, get hired. You know, largely as a result of their community contributions, whether writing or, you know, podcasting or whatever, and, you know, basically put themselves in a position to express the opinions and thoughts they had about Magic, and people listen. So, you know, if you're looking to get a job as a game designer, you know, things like, you know, a blog where you talk about game design, things like, you know, podcasts, articles, etc., all these things are very good ways to sort of get a foot into the industry.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, people can make podcasts and blogs and Twitter and try to just reach out to people who will notice them, you know? But how do you know if you just maybe suck at game design? Like, you know, like, well, how do you know what you're blogging about is going to get noticed as good? Or maybe people will look at it and be like, dude, this guy's a dumbass. Like,
I mean, it's definitely true. I mean, there's lots of people out there who are, you know, like, oh, I made this custom Magic set. And you're like, dude, this is terrible. You know, like I've had people come up to me, you know, at conventions and stuff who are like, and we get, you know, people asking us to, you know, look at their games, review their games pretty consistently. And, you know, a lot of these games are just really bad. And you know, it's, I mean, really, you just have to show them to people who are willing to be honest with you. And, you know, obviously it's tough if you don't know people who do have sort of game design chops, to get, you know, both honest and accurate feedback. But really, you know, sharing your ideas with people who are willing to critique them is really the best sort of thing. I mean, it's like being a writer or anything. You know, you're only going to be able to sort of get a decent sense of your own skill at it if you open yourself up to criticism among a group that actually knows what they're talking about.
Yeah, so you're saying, like, surround yourself with people who are also into game design and try to bounce ideas off people that are, I guess, good at game design, or like that at least have it going in the right direction.
I mean, things like, you know, discussing things in like internet forums where people are all interested in game design. Like I frequent the Elitist Jerks forum, which is originally just it's funny. The name is just really
surprise,
funny.
Surprise.
Is that Magic Salvation or what?
it's actually originally a World of Warcraft guild. The name was sort of a joke because, you know, people were called, like, you know, Elitist Jerks because they didn't want to, like, you know, raid with these other people. But it sort of spawned a sort of game theory, you know, not game theory in the sense of sort of mathematical game theory, but sort of, you know, theory. And, you know, there's lots of people who are interested in, you know, games and have lots of, you know, interesting ideas about games that are, you know, shared in various discussion threads. There's also just, like, random bullshit discussion threads about all sorts of things. But, I mean, really sort of finding a community that has similar interests, and, you know, getting feedback from them is probably your best bet.
Like, what kind of people do you want to be noticed by to get into the game design? Because I'm like, you're kind of giving me stuff from your perspective, but these people who are talking about, who are listening and, like, interested in this conversation, they don't have your friends. They don't have your play skill. You know what I mean? They're coming from nothing. They want to be a game designer. Like, how does, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, it really depends on what sort of, you know, game design, like, you want to do. I mean, if you're looking, you know, I imagine a lot of your listeners are, you know, Magic players, TCG players, who, you know, are maybe looking to get into, you know, working on Magic or working on, you know, similar sorts of games to Magic. And I mean, really, sort of what I was talking about before with the, you know, the community contributions writing about Magic. I mean, if you look at, like, again, sort of, you know, Gavin Verhey, Sam Stoddard, like, they you know, made their impression primarily through just expressing intelligent ideas about games. And you know, I think that if you want to get into game design, you know, you need to, you know, find a community in which you can, you know, have those sort of ideas and bounce them off of people. Because I mean, if you know, you have, you know, whatever idea of, you know, what might be improved or whatever, and you know, you never, you know, share it with someone who might be able to criticize it, you know, you're never going to really know whether other people might share this idea or think it's good, think it's bad, whatever. I mean, it's really just sort of, you know, sharing the ideas that you have about games with people and getting feedback.
I see.
And learning from that feedback.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So what's your email address so these people can send you these ideas? And...
people shoot ideas to me on Twitter if they like. I'm totally happy to respond on Twitter.
Because they're restricted to 140 characters. That's
it,
why
it makes it a lot easier to respond to Twitter questions than it does something else.
Does this game suck? Yep.
Well, yep. have you fully unlinked your Facebook and Twitter now?
Well, my Twitter is now linked to my public figure Facebook account. Okay. So, it no longer goes to my private account. Yeah, it's interestingly, I still have like tons of people who follow my personal account. And I like accidentally posted something, you know, just some link publicly at one point and got like 150 comments on it. I was like, oh, oops. It was like, yeah, it ends up being sort of a deluge sometimes.
What was the link?
It was actually something about the whole Chick-fil-A situation.
Oh, nice.
Which so for the Canadians that are listening is not Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A.
FYI.
Chick-fil-A, huh?
In Canada, we don't have Chick-fil-A. So we all call it Chick-fil-A. Not Chick-fil-A.
Did you just say different things? Because it sounded like you said the same thing.
Oh, God damn it.
Oh, man. So, yeah, so sometimes you forget that you're talking to, like, thousands of people, is what you're saying?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, it was totally unintentional. I was just, you know, posting something, you know, for, you know, my friends. Because, I mean, it's, you know, as someone who, you know, is something of a public figure, which is still sort of weird to me, even after, you know, however many years of, you know, playing Magic and whatever, you know, I end up having to sort of separate, you know, my sort of personal and private life. And, you know, I actually originally, the whole sort of impetus for that was, you know, I posted a picture when I was like at a pre-release of you know, a female player. Mm-hmm. And there got like tons of, you know, like, you know, really sort of rude comments. And then, you know, that all were instantly deleted when I told people that I'd be blocking them. And you know, I was just like, you know what, like, I want to be able to use my Facebook like a normal human being, as opposed to trying to, you know, like, wade through all of this bullshit.
Now, it also should, you know, everyone should be aware, this was the most recent Jordy Tate-esque, like, crusade source. Yeah. Like, blame Kibler again.
Yeah, I remember that one. That was really recently, and it was, it was kind of like make-believe for me. Like, just, I don't know. People got all pissed at me because I said, yeah, this is crazy that this is happening. I just can't believe it. And they're like, you're ignorant. And I'm just like, well, I just don't spend... I'm like, I don't spend time... I don't spend time like... Yeah, I mean, anyways, shut the fuck up, Jay.
children, Christ.
Yeah,
remember, hey, he started it.
Yeah, so, but... It was just that whole, all of those situations just make my fucking skin crawl.
I just think it's, I don't know, I just think it's dumb that people would just, like, not put a filter on their mouth. Like, okay, if you think something, then, like, at least run it by the filter and be like, how would this look in public if I put this in a public place? Like, that's the very least you can ask people to do, and they just don't do it. I don't know, man.
It is pretty remarkable that you know, the sort of stuff that people just, like, spew onto the internet without, like, and it's not even like, you know, this is some sort of, like, anonymous forum too. I mean, like, maybe they're anonymous to most of the people because I don't know them, but it's just like, dude, you're fucking posting this on my Facebook.
Yeah, like, your Facebook.
I mean, one of my responses is just like, you know, have some fucking respect. And it's just like, whether, and, you know, Sam Black responded, he's like, the great thing about that is, like, you could mean respect for you, respect for her, respect for themselves, respect for any sort of modicum standard of decency, and it would all stop them from actually posting it if they had any of it. Yeah. You know, any one of those. And yet, here we are.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
Yeah. So, So speaking of people spewing random shit up on the internet,
Jay,
so
what do you think?
You stream a lot, right, Brian?
I do.
Yeah. You've you know, you are very regularly popping up on my iPhone because I do follow your stream on my Twitch account, and you're very regularly popping up. Oh, you're streaming again. BM Kibler streaming. So you have undoubtedly accomplished the first viral stream in the Magic community. there was the one night that you decided to come home drunk from wherever and start some drafts. And I think it was about a 3-hour stream. I don't know how much of it you fell asleep through, but like, can you talk to us a little bit about sort of what motivated you just be like, yeah, fuck it, let's go. And then talk about the response afterwards, because they're epic.
Well, I mean, there's actually been a couple of these. There's the original one, but yeah, basically I was out at, a club. I went to go see, Above and Beyond, one of my favorite, trance acts. And I come back from the club, and I'm like, you know what? I'm not really all that tired yet, so I'm just going to have a couple more drinks. And, you know, well, this is actually, you know, not long after I had pretty much started streaming. And somehow it seemed like a good idea at the time. You know what? The world needs to see this. You know, like, online, why not share it with everyone? You know? And, I jumped on my stream, started playing around, like, ended up, like, you know, playing against, like, Brad Nelson. You know, he like came on and was like, you know, trolling me with some like Slayer of the Wicked deck when I was playing some deck with like Daybreak Ranger. He was just like playing a Slayer of the Wicked deck to just kill all my Daybreak Rangers. And I was
it was that other creature, the 2-drop that
it was both. He had both of them.
Oh, well, Elite Inquisitor.
Yeah, he actually had an Elite Inquisitor and Slayer of the Wicked in his deck just to troll me. You know, and obviously it's very effective trolling me because I'm hammered at this point.
Yeah, and he was good. I remember this. You were getting pissed off. You're like,
and yeah, I'm like seriously? Yelling at the, you know, at the screen, and like at one point I was like talking about how, you know, Thrun was obviously the last troll because look at him, how could he get laid?
Oh my god.
So, and you know, people's response was just you know, it was. It was very popular, to say the least. People were like, oh my god, like, you know, like, kicking around. And that was really, you know, one of the first times that, like, yeah, like you were saying, you know, that I've seen people really, like, linking to recordings of streams. Because, I mean, you know, streaming's cool, streaming's fun, but, I mean, like, individual streams are rarely all that memorable, specifically, because, yeah, you know, you're playing some Magic. And, you know, while there may be, you know, some interesting things that happen, you know, these aren't really sort of, you know, like, Super Bowl moments or anything that are going on. People aren't going to go back and rewatch them most of the time. But you know, I think that this was, you know, a different sort of moment for most people. So
I remember I stumbled upon it. I was just like editing and working and stuff like I always do late at night, and I wasn't sleeping. I was just like cruising, and then you were like streaming or something like that on Twitter, and I'm like, what? I'm like, I'm gonna get in here and just watch some Kibler while I'm like working. And all of a sudden, like, I'm listening to you talk, and I'm like, oh man, Kibler's drunk. And I'm just like watching you play, and you're like, seriously, you're not gonna win. You're seriously not gonna win. And I'm like, this is freaking gold. So I started like putting on Twitter, like, oh my gosh, Kipler's drunk and he's streaming right now. It's awesome. And yeah, that was one of my first introductions to streaming, because like I really didn't use streaming, and then you were on there, and I was just like doing stuff. And I'm like, yeah, whatever, I'll watch his stream, you know. So after that, I was like trying to watch all the streams because I'm like, oh man, how many of these dudes get drunk? And then like, not many of them get drunk.
None is the answer to that.
It is a rarity even for me. So, or at least I like to think so.
So you recently had a stream during the last 2 weeks of Cube drafting, where you weren't alone.
Yes.
You were entertaining a lady companion.
Yes.
How erotic.
So did she leave before or after breakfast?
Oh, she was actually here just before I came on the show, so.
Hey. Oh.
So this is a monogamous lady caller.
Oh, yeah, she is my girlfriend.
Hey.
Oh,
what's
you
up,
just
Christine Sprinkle?
You just broke all the girls' hearts.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I actually, you know, was on the coverage in what was the last tournament? Columbus or whatever, you know, briefly. And, you know, after I bombed out of the tournament, you know, she like texted me. She's like, oh, does this mean you can come home early? And I was like, no, it doesn't mean I can come home early. And so I was explaining that on the coverage. And I was just like, and also, by the way, you'd be very happy. I just referred to you as my girlfriend on the coverage for everyone to hear. So she's very aware of, you know, the sort of the publicness of my my persona and everything. And, you know, consistently tags me in pictures and me in pictures with her on Facebook all the time. So
I got to ask, like, when you initially picked her up, did you go with the game designer line, or did you go with the "I play a collectible card game for a living" line?
Oh, the funny thing is, I actually met her on OkCupid.
Yes.
And she, originally, the first time I ever met her was at Grand Prix Anaheim. She just came to the Grand Prix to come, you know, because I explained like all this thing, you know, what I did, you know, Magic and everything, and you know, I was like really busy traveling tournaments and stuff. I'm like, well, you know, I'm around this weekend, but I'm going to be at this tournament in Anaheim. And she came by Anaheim and, you know, hung out with me after I lost. She actually came right when I made top eight, which was pretty sweet, you know. It's like, hey, you know, here, first impression. I'm awesome at this.
I am so the best.
And then, so, and like, while you're talking to her.
What?
While you're talking to her, like, guys are coming up to her, right, and being like, hey, congratulations, man, right? All that kind of stuff's going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, it was definitely sort of, you know, people coming up to me asking me for my autograph and stuff, and she's just like, what? This is such a strange world.
Be oh, excellent. Man,
that's awesome.
So good. Yeah, okay. That's awesome.
But yeah. So.
That's funny. When I was in, I went to the only Magic tournament I went to with my wife was Nashville. Mm-hmm. And I went there, and she wanted to come see me play. So, like, she was there with one of my other friends named Leah, and they both came to the tournament site, like, after I had already, like, got in, like, went myself. Then they came to the tournament site looking for me to watch me play. So they start asking people, like, hey, do you know where Jonathan Medina is? And people are like, yeah, I don't know who the hell that guy is, you know? So when they finally find me, they're like, hey, man, I thought you were popular. We asked, like, 10 dudes, and they don't know who the hell you are. I was like, ah, you asked the wrong guys, man. It's, I don't know what's going on.
Should have asked the guys with binders, not the guys who are actually playing.
Oh man,
that's wicked. So you obviously have made some good strides this year in terms of successes. You are the leader of the U.S. team for the World Magic Cup. You were you know, the number one seed after you know, in the States. You have an unreal team, right? Or at least most of an unreal team in front of you. Have you guys started testing yet? Have you started looking at any of this? Like, where are you at with all of that?
We have a Facebook group that we discuss stuff on. We haven't really started doing much testing yet. You know, M13 just came out of Magic Online, and we're all sort of scattered across the country. So, you know, we haven't really had any chance to test together yet. But we certainly have plans to start testing on Magic Online really soon.
Nice. Modern, obviously, is a big piece of that.
Modern is only the format for the Players' Championship, really. If one person plays Modern at the World Cup, but Modern is the main constructed format at the Players' Championship.
Okay, so that was the one. Because one of your articles recently, the one where you were talking about your Doran list after Columbus and the changes you make, you had indicated that, you know, it is very important to you. Have you sort of started to actually put the work into that to look at it? I mean, are you...
Not so much. I'm actually testing for that particular tournament with Finkel.
Oh, nice.
The testing arrangements for the Players' Championship when half of the tournament was our existing test team was a little awkward because, you know, certain people were like, well, you know, I don't want to, like, you know, to test with half the tournament because it'd be just, you know, lame. Like, and then other people sort of, you know, had the you know, perspective that basically, you know, they thought they might do, you know, more work on these decks that other people, you know, they'd be then giving to other people who are going to beat them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one thing in a, you know, a 300 person field is something totally different in a 16 person field. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we ended up just splitting up into various groups, and I talked to John, and I am flying out from Indy after the World Magic Cup, staying at his place in New York for that week, then going to the Grand Prix in Boston, then going to the Players Championship.
That's awesome. Of all people to work with, that's fantastic.
So yeah, I mean, John also didn't really have anyone else to work with because none of his usual, you know, test team was qualified, so mm-hmm. you know, he was definitely very receptive to the idea of you know, getting together and breaking it.
Sweet. So, I've just a couple randoms. Can you recount for us? Well, no, I'll just ask you first the glaring, you know, one on the wall. Why have you taken until now to do any podcasts? Like, are just none of them worth your time, or do you just have nothing to say? Like,
well, none of them but one.
I mean, frankly, I'm really, really busy. I have my commitments with, you know, game design, then testing for tournaments and everything like that. That takes up, you know, a lot of my time. I've gotten various offers that have conflicted with, you know, times that I'm traveling and things like that. And I mean, honestly, just it hasn't been a priority to me to really, you know, make a point of getting out there for, you know, the podcasting community. But I mean, you know, to be perfectly honest, one of the big reasons I agreed to do this is because, you know, Soulforge just announced and we wanted to be able to share some news of that with the world. But I mean, it's something I might, you know, sort of get into more frequently because I'm having a good time now. So
good. Excellent.
I mean, you could retire on top if you wanted and not do anymore. I wouldn't be opposed to that, but
yeah, I mean, you know, it's as I was saying, like I'm really busy. It may seem like, you know, oh, I'm just streaming sometimes or whatever. Like, you know, I obviously have time. But I mean, you know, even when I'm not sort of, you know, working on game design stuff, you know, preparing for tournaments and doing, you know, various sort of promotional stuff for our games, you know, it really does take up a lot of time. So,
yeah, definitely. I mean, I think a lot of people don't know what goes on behind the scenes, you know? If right. they see you, like, on Twitter or something like that, they're probably just not understanding that there's, like, infinite things going on, you know?
Well, to yeah, a lot of people, too, like, they don't understand that this is probably, like your job, right? Like it's still kind of is a new professional gaming is still like a new thing in the world. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And I mean, I sort of split my time. You know, when people are like, oh, you're a professional Magic player, it's like, well, you know, I write about Magic. You know, additional sort of job on top of that that takes up even more time. So you know, the combination of the commitments ends up really leaving me with not all that much time. You know, like I. During the week, you know, I basically spend, you know, one night writing an article, one night making a video, you know, after getting done with work. And, you know, I definitely cherish the time I have to just sort of relax. So I usually spend that time streaming instead.
Nice. So I actually have a question from one of our Twitter followers. And they wanted to know if you feel like your drinking on your stream actually improves your playing ability or whether, you know, it's definitely a detriment.
Well, considering I clicked through my first turn once, not even like F6 through my first turn. I actually just like clicked every
just
phase.
Just clicked the button.
Yeah, just it was like, okay. Okay, this is of course after like mulliganing the stone nuts, and I'm just like, oh, I think I probably win less. Probably a little bit less.
Your main phase, like, oh, so, okay, it's nice.
It's like, yeah, I'm aware there's a main phase. You don't just tell me twice. Yeah,
tell me all this.
Like, come on.
So that being said, I need you to click on this link I just put into the post, and John, just don't grunt. So I need to know if you've ever heard of this before.
Oh, I have seen this, I think.
You have you?
If this is what I think it is, yeah, so I have seen some of these.
So for the record, I just put the link to the Booze Cube visual spoiler in the chat box.
Oh, yeah.
And we have, so the question is, if we were at an event, would you participate in a Booze Cube with us?
If I was out of the event, yeah.
Done.
Because you know what? Owen Turtenwald and Conley Woods and fucking Tom motherfucking Martell said that they would do that. We had the sweet pad, had a hot tub, lots of booze, chicks. They were all like, yeah, we'll do that for sure. It sounds great. And then they just bailed. Jerks.
So you just go ahead and say that you're going to do it and then just bail because it's totally acceptable for those guys.
Because you're an elitist jerk.
Yeah. All right. Oh yeah, so we need to hear about.
We need to ask the controversial question.
I'll get there, but first, okay. Give me your most epic credit card game victory.
Well, it's sort of like they say in Rounders, you know, you have you don't remember how you built your bankroll, but you remember how you lost it. I mostly remember my epic credit card game defeat.
So
can you
so,
for the
so
listeners? Can you
those.
Just explain the credit card game because a lot of them ask me about it.
The credit card game is anytime that a group has a shared expense. You take everyone's credit card who was involved in it, you shuffle them up, and you deal them out one at a time and the last credit card remaining at the end pays for everything.
Boom.
So, yeah, but my, I mean, I've been involved in a number of pretty big games. I played in a bunch of games in Vegas with, you know, a bunch of pro poker players and stuff. I think when I lost was actually, we were paying for our table at a club, in Vegas, XS. And, you know, bottle service in Vegas is not cheap.
Not cheap.
And this was, you know, a group of like, I don't even remember how many of us. I mean, I was plastered at the time because, hey, we were at a club in Vegas getting bottle service. Seems it was good. The last two were me and my buddy Dan Burdick. And Dave Williams was actually the one holding the cards. And he said something that, like, basically he said, and I didn't hear him at the time, that, you know, okay, I'm going to, like, you know, slide the card, you know, on the top off. So, you know, the one that you see is the one on the bottom or whatever, and, you know, the person picked, you know, basically they picked the card. I see the other card, and I think I won. I think I didn't have to pay. And then he was like, dude, why are you celebrating? Because both me and my buddy were all celebrating. And it's like, one of you is wrong here. And it was me who was wrong, and I had to pay a lot of money.
How much?
I think that ended up being like $3,000.
What a beating.
Wow.
That was including some buyouts for you know, people who weren't playing. So we had a few bottles.
Oh my god.
Shit. What a baller. What a baller.
That's a beating. That is a beating.
Why don't you do that, John Medina? You're a baller, aren't you?
No, man, I'm not a baller.
No, that's
you
like
guys should,
next
you guys
level
credit
baller.
Card game for who donates $10,000.
KYT. Call up Sal. We're going to credit card game for this. Oh, man. Just so you know, Brian, Sal is the owner of Face-to-Face Games, the guy who's sponsored this podcast.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. He's a cool guy. He's kind of reminds me of like a mafia mobster, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
And he's
but like in a good don't, way, in a good way.
Don't have me killed, please.
Nice.
Is there a Canadian mafia?
Yeah, and it's in Quebec.
Yeah,
where Sal's from.
Yeah,
what's it called, Jay?
It's rank out there, man.
Yeah,
like, I am more appalled by the things those people do than by the things that I read about in my true crime novels that my girlfriend continues to buy.
No,
that your girlfriend continues to buy.
Yeah, you know, I don't spend money on that stuff. So, yeah,
he reads it though.
I read it.
It's there. Read you got it.
He's going to be like, honey, when you're where's the new pot? Novel? It came out this week.
Spend your money, girlfriend. Spend
yeah,
your money.
Spend your money. Here.
So have you got any scumbag stories for us, Brian?
You got to have at least one. Even a fake troll Conley Woods one.
Well, you actually just brought up Conley Woods. This isn't really a scumbag story, I guess. But it just depends how you define a scumbag story. This is in Barcelona. We're all like testing for you know the Pro Tour coming up, we're staying in these two adjoining apartments, and you know it, given that we're in Europe, all these apartments have you know the sort of key in the light switch thing, so you know you can only have the lights on if you have the key in the light switch. So we're all testing, and like you know like Conley comes in, and he's like, hey, you know, does anyone have a key or whatever? And Conley had just lost the credit card game the night before. We're all out at dinner. And, you know, he lost, it was like a $1,200 credit card game.
Oh, God, this was like the weekend or the week
this was,
of his
this
insane
actually
credit
been,
card beats, right?
Yeah, this actually may have been after the second night that he like a huge credit card beating. So, like, Conley is in, like, a pretty bad mood. You know, he's just, like, taking beat after beat. You know, he's just like, if I had lost my wallet in the first day of this trip, I'd be like up way more money. You know, like I would be in way better shape. Like if I had to like get a new passport, all this. So you know, we're all like you know, testing whatnot, and Conley like you know is like arguing with people about like you know needing a key or whatever, and we're all just like we're all you know playtesting whatever. Like no, you know we don't know what it is, whatever. And then like you know Conley leaves, and suddenly the lights go out, and we're just like, what the fuck. And it dawns on us that Conley had just like you know gotten mad, grabbed the key in the light switch, and just like stormed out. I go out after him. I'm like, dude, what the fuck are you doing?
What
like,
a douche!
You know, and he's just like, oh, I'm trying to like you know reasonably ask people for you know this thing, whatever. And you know everyone's like you know just blowing me off. key to like have light so we could play test for the fucking Pro Tour. And he's just like, if someone's got a problem with it, you know, just tell him to bring it, and like slaps his chest. And I was like, are you trying to fight me? Is that what happened? Like storm out with the key from the light switch, and now you're like, you want to get into a fight with me over this? Is this what's happening? So yeah, Conley stormed off, took our key. It took us like half an hour or something to like find another key somewhere. And
see, Magic players don't fight, man. They just talk about it.
I was just like, are you serious? You want to fight me over the lights in our entire apartment? And then like, you're mad at me? I don't get it.
Oh man, that's hilarious.
It was a pretty interesting experience.
Wow, John, you had a question that you needed to ask here, right?
Yeah, I got some controversial stuff. Well, I got a controversial question, and then I have a question, just a random question.
Okay.
So I'll start with the random one. We'll save the controversial one since I know everyone's on the edge of their seats right now. So first question is, when Tom Martell and Steve Minetti were battling out in this forum, right? This is like the epic forum battle that Tom Martell totally put Steve Minetti in his place. So in the middle of the forum, you popped in there and you were like, they were giving their like their schooling, right? And you're like, oh yeah, well I went to seminary and you're all going to hell. So did you really go to seminary?
I didn't go to seminary, but I do have a degree in religion. My degree is in philosophy and religion.
Where is it from?
Emory University in Atlanta.
Emory.
Yes.
And is that like, why did you decide to get a degree in philosophy and
philosophy?
Because I find what people believe and why to be very interesting.
Okay, so you just wanted to get a degree in that?
Basically, I mean, like, I knew. I mean,
so you just wanted to get a degree in that?
I find it interesting.
Answer
too,
me,
I don't
I'm
have
John
a degree in it, you know?
No, I mean, I knew, partway through when I was in college that I was going to do something involving games for a living, and I just studied what I found interesting.
I see.
Final answer.
Yeah. I mean, I'll pick your brain about this some other time because I'm really interested in this in this topic. But on to the controversial. So I think it was Pro Tour Austin, and basically what we're going to talk about is this Angel Despair trigger. You know what
I'm
talking
about. Controversial question. This is an old question, but okay.
I know it's old, but it's old. But people are going to expect us to ask it, right? Because you've never been on a podcast.
I was thinking, you know, if you're going to ask a controversial question, given all the forum trolls, it's like, are you really gay? Because like that's one of the things.
Speaking of gay,
people would actually believe her.
Speaking of gay, Chris Lansdell tweeted that. Chris Lansdell tweeted that a Magic player came out as being gay and then said that it was brave. Can you find out who that was? Is it somebody that's famous?
What does it matter?
I'm just curious.
I mean, I know who he's talking about, but I mean, I don't want to share that person's personal business with an audience.
But didn't they? All right, that's fair. That's fair.
I mean, they came out to their
part of
coming out friends.
Oh,
sure.
It's not
my place to do that.
Oh, I see. No, I didn't realize it was to their family friends type idea.
I mean, like it was, you know, it was a public Facebook post, but I mean, like, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that they want it trumpeted across the universe.
Yeah. And like the reason I'm not asking you the controversial question, if you're gay or not, I don't care if you're gay or not. Like,
it's just really funny. Cause that's apparently tons of people in the forums do to think. And my girlfriend, actually, there was a post on some, you know, reply to some interview thing with me on Star City, and someone was like, so, you know, what I really want to know is if Brian Kibler gay, and she replies, like, you know, here is this bullet point list, you know, why I know that Brian Kibler is not gay, and, like, you know, number three is just, like, he has sex with women. I'm sure other women out there can back me up on this.
So yeah, the Angel of Despair trigger, like, I guess what had happened... I don't really remember the details. I think it had something to do with like a meddling mage. The Angel of Despair came in. The trigger was missed. It could have killed the meddling mage and then allowed him to fire spout, I guess.
I mean, I can explain the entire situation if you want.
Yeah, go for it.
So I'm playing. This is game five of the quarterfinals in Austin. And my opponent casts Hypergenesis. And he Hypergenesis has, and he tells me, I say, you know, oh, like, you know, is it good? What do you got, basically? Because I've been sort of playfully bantering with him the entire time. Every time he casts Hypergenesis, I'm like, am I dead? Am I dead? And he's like, you know, he's like, I only have two creatures. I'm like, are they good? And he says, you know, they're Progenitus and Angel of Despair. So I'm like, okay. And this is before we put anything to play yet. So, yep. You know, he puts in Progenitus. I put in a Meddling Mage. And, you know, I'm naming my Meddling Mages as we go. And he puts in Angel of Despair. I put in Meddling Mage. And I have Baneslayer Angel in my hand. And I know that I can't put Baneslayer Angel into play, because if I do, he'll just Angel of Despair. You know, I'm going through naming each of my Meddling Mages, and then, you know, we finish resolving the Hypergenesis, and he just says, go. And, you know, I untap, cast the Baneslayer Angel, and ultimately end, like, plow his, or path his Angel, and end up beating him with the Exalted, and my Baneslayer Angel races his Progenitus.
Races his Progenitus, yeah, I remember right. that.
And he didn't, and he did not kill anything with Angel of Despair. And, you know, I at the you know at the time I thought it was a May effect, and you know I knew he had the Angel of Despair because he said it, you know, he told me. Mm-hmm. And that's why I specifically didn't put my Baneslayer in play. And then, you know, after the match, the reporter, you know, who's sitting there, Josh Bennett, he says, "Oh, what did Angel of Despair kill?" And I'm just like, "Oh, he didn't kill anything, he forgot." And then he picks up his Angel of Despair and reads it and hands it to me, and I pick it up and look at it, and it, you know, it just like destroyed Tiger Permanent. So, you know, that was sort of the, you know, oh shit, what happened sort of
thing. Did you feel bad at that point?
I mean, it's hard for me to feel bad at that point because I just won. I felt shitty. Yeah. You know, I can't honestly say I felt bad because, you know, I won the match.
Yeah, but and I mean, he should know what his cards do, right?
Right. You know, and you know, I mean, there were lots of people who were saying, you know, oh, how could you not know, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, they're like, you know, you must have playtested all the time. I'm like, dude, we playtested with proxy cards. You know, I didn't play during that block or whatever. So, you know, there were tons of people who basically were just accusing me of cheating, saying that I knew that it was a mandatory effect and ignored it on the forums and stuff. So, yeah.
So, basically, that was the controversy, was that not that you knew that the trigger was there, but that you knew it was mandatory.
I knew that he had the Angel of Despair. That's the reason I didn't play Baneslayer, but I thought it was a May effect, and when he passed the turn, and I mean, it was after sort of all this confusion with, like, you know, I'd named for three different Meddling Mages, so, you know, he... Just forgot, and I thought it was you know okay that he just forgot. Uh-huh. And you know I was like, you know, I was specifically like trying not to look at his Angel of Despair because I didn't want to remind him, you know, that he missed his effect. But you know, turns out it was a must effect.
And now under the new rules, under the this new doesn't rules, really matter, right?
Yeah, under the new rules, there is no asterisk next to my often win. So
because under the new rules, if he would have missed that, even though it's not a May, still it's a lapse, right?
Correct.
A lapse trigger. Okay.
Yes.
So anybody who has any problem, look, the new rules, it's already there, dude. Yeah. So
he's just precognitive.
Retroactively absolved of any possible wrong.
I mean, Brian Kibler is a trailblazer.
He was just playtesting his new game design.
I mean, in all seriousness, I mean that's pretty much the sort of reason why they made that rules change, is because, you know, in a you know, if I did
Brian
know
Brian Kibler's never wrong.
No, if that you know, if I had known that was a must effect, you know, I would have been obligated to point it out, and you know, he would have killed something and I would have lost. But an unscrupulous player who knew it was a must effect could just not say anything and get away with, you know, winning a game where they should have lost. And basically the way that it worked, penalized because, you know, their opponents could like, you know, make this quote unquote mistake. And they had to, you know, remind them, and the players who, you know, were shady could get away with it.
I see. That's a good way to look. Good way to look at it, I think.
I agree. I also think my way of looking at it is good.
Yeah, I'll allow it. You know.
We've got a fantastic editor. That's actually a quick question. Did you see any aggro loam at GP Columbus?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, good. Kyle, there you go. That's for you.
I didn't see any either, Kyle. I mean, me and KYT were there. You could have asked us.
Yeah. your metagame report.
Kibler was out after round like three, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I played 7 rounds? I don't know. I lost a lot, though. I
know
won
you did.
One actual match, so.
What did you play? You played Doran, right?
Yeah.
And do you like that deck going forward, or do you think it's shitty?
I kind of like the deck, you know, going... I felt like I got pretty unlucky in a lot of my losses. I lost to Godenis when he was, you know, dead on board to my Thalia, had to chump block with his Mutavault, then drew Path to Exile, then drew his one remaining Baneslayer while I drew three land. And yeah, then I lost to a birthing pod deck that had no cards in hand and like a Bird of Paradise and a Wall of Roots, while I had Elspeth and two Tarmogoyfs. And he drew exactly his one Eternal Witness to bring back his Kiki Jiki to copy his Eternal Witness to bring back his Court of Calling to combo kill me.
That's
sounds
awkward.
Like, it sounds like he played pretty tight.
Yeah, absolutely. he got there.
Hey, if you're listening, man, you lucky bastard.
I mean, you know, I don't think necessarily any of my opponents played poorly or anything like that, but I definitely felt like they got pretty fortunate to beat me from those board states.
Does it annoy you knowing that that guy went back to his friends and like high-fived them and just like, man, I just kicked Kibler's ass. I was dead on board. Luck sacked my Eternal Witness. And went
not,
to town
I mean,
on
it. I actually think it's awesome that people get excited when they play me and beat me or even lose to me. You know, like people, I play people in like, you know, inside events and they're just like, you know, they're like, well, win or lose, I'm happy because, you know, I got to play against you. And it's really cool to be able to be in that sort of position where, you know, people really take something out of the matches that we play.
Yeah.
You know, if they beat me, it's a great story for them, and that's really cool. And you know, whatever, it's a game of Magic. Like, you know, I've played thousands of games of Magic in my life. You know, some of them I get unlucky and lose, and that's fine.
So, would you say you don't tilt?
I don't think I really do. I mean, like there are certainly times when, you know, I make, you know, poor decisions because, you know, for reasons that are related to my emotional state, which, you know, is tilting. But I think that in general, I'm pretty resilient to it. I actually had someone on my stream recently, you know, when I was playing a sealed deck event and like I got unlucky like two games in a row, just got like stalled on mana, and they're like, oh, don't tilt, man, you know, your deck's good. And I was like, dude, like I've played literally, you know, as I said before, I played thousands of games of Magic. These are like games I'm playing, you know, in a online pre-release of all things. Like, these are not going to upset me. You know, I've like, you know, lost, you know, way bigger matches due to getting way unluckier. And, you know, at a certain point, you just have to be used to it. You know, you just get numb to it. Yeah. So it's like, I mean, I played online poker for a while, and it's the same sort of thing. You know, people who get upset in situations where, you know, they get unlucky or whatever, it's like, eventually, you've played enough hands that, you know, you've lost with aces against whatever enough times, or, you know, in Magic, you've been mana screwed enough times that, you know, it just doesn't affect you anymore, or it shouldn't. You know, if you're gonna allow Magic to have such an important sort of place in your life that you get emotionally invested in it, you need to you know, get used to just sort of shrugging your shoulders and playing the next match.
I think this is great advice. I have a guy at my shop. His name's Ryan, and he thinks you're an awesome player. He's like you're like one of his pros that he'd like to meet and stuff like that. So he is he's like picking up the game really fast. You know, he used to play Yu-Gi-Oh or whatever. And but one of the things that he's really got a bad habit of is every time he loses, he tilts. He sure. just like auto tilts, and like you know, I think this is really good advice that you just have to learn that, you know.
I mean, it was sort of, you know, we were talking before about, you know, my degree or whatever. You know, I've joked before that, you know, my degree in philosophy and religion allows me to, you know, stay calm and focused as I get mana screwed for the thousandth time. Like, it's like, oh, well, you know, this too shall pass, you know.
Oh, man, that's good. He just quoted some scripture for you guys, man. I'm a big fan of Brian Kibler. So I also like attaching to the Doran story on the GP Columbus. I know that one of our listeners, Mike Hardy, he went almost undefeated. I think X and one on day one with Doran at Columbus too. So, I mean, the deck maybe wasn't that bad, you know.
It's the sort of thing, like, you know, Mike Flores actually talked about this in a relatively recent article where, you know, if you go into, say, a standard tournament and you play Delver, and, you know, you go like 2-4. You know, no one's gonna be like, ah, pff, you idiot playing Delver. But, you know, if you go to that same tournament and you play like, you know, mono black control, someone will be like, pff, you idiot, you know, mono black control, you went 2-4. Well, you know, you don't have nearly enough sample size to make a lot of these judgments sometimes. And when, you know, when someone does poorly with, you know, a deck that's a little bit off the radar, people tend to blame the deck as the reason for their failure, rather than, you know, whatever other possible set of circumstances could have actually caused it. You know, whereas if someone plays, you know, sort of a stock deck, the best deck, whatever, you know, if they do poorly, it's like, oh, bad matchups, bad luck, whatever. It's like, well, you can't have it both ways. You know, you can't like always blame whatever is most convenient for you to blame.
Yeah.
All right. So, can we move on to what have you been playing? And can we do our sneak peek ditch for the week? Or do we have more stuff for Brian?
And I just have one quick question, Brian. You talked about how, you know, you were working at Upper Deck on World of Warcraft TCG, and you left Upper Deck because it wasn't that great. I wanted to know, because I think another company bought the World of Warcraft license, like you mentioned. Have you been following, because you were one of the lead editors, correct me if I'm wrong, have you been following their progress and what changes they've made with that game, and do you have any thoughts on their game?
I haven't really been following the WoW TCG too much since I stopped working on it. Right now, the head developer for that game is Patrick Sullivan. And you know, he's a very talented designer developer. You know, and I have great faith that you know, he's sort of moved the ship in the right direction. He actually we shared a lot of thoughts when I was working on WoW, and he was, you know, working on other projects you know, would occasionally contribute to WoW development. And I had somewhat different opinions than some of the other members of the development team, and Patrick tended to be on my side of things. So I know that we tend to see eye to eye on a lot of those matters.
Wow, that's a fact I didn't know, that Patrick Sullivan was one of the main guys now.
Yeah, he has been the head developer of the WoW TCG for a while. He pretty much since it went to Cryptozoic, which is the company that has the license now.
Well.
Wow. Mm. All I knew that he played a red deck. That's all I knew.
Better than anyone on the planet.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Shout out to Patrick Sullivan. It's for sure.
He actually lives like 3 doors down from me now too. So.
Really?
Yeah.
So you guys can like just have this mega game design like party.
I mean, our you know, like our Friday nights or whatever frequently involve beer and talking about games. So
wow, that sounds awesome.
It is pretty sweet.
So you just been like Magic cubing and Magic Online M13 releases is sort of what you've been playing lately, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, I've been messing around a bit with Standard, but doing primarily Limited. Since the pre-release events went down, I've been tinkering around with some Standard decks.
Nice.
Let me guess, Naya.
Actually, the deck I've been, amusingly enough, giving my anecdote earlier, the deck that I've been messing with the most right now is Mono Black Control.
Yeah, I lost that deck at FNM, and it was really frustrating because he was just grinding the shit out of me with Trading Post, like over and over again. And it was like, as soon as I got like just a little bit of a board position, he's like, mutilate. I'm just like, ah, are you kidding me? He's at like 3 life, and I'm just like, bonfire off the top. I'm running 4 bonfires. I'm like, bonfire, bonfire. You know, 15 turns later, bonfire, bonfire. Come on, bonfire. No bonfire. Land. You know, one drop. I'm just like, oh, come on, I'm going to die to Mono Black. So I died. So yeah, are you running?
My Mono Black deck is a little bit different. I actually kill people primarily with Gristlebrand.
Whoa. Jesus Christ!
I'm not messing around.
Yeah, no Trading Post for you, right?
Yeah, no, I don't want incremental advantage. I want my cards all at once.
Are you playing the new Liliana in this or no Liliana?
Yeah, I have a couple copies of the new Liliana. I actually have a copy of Diabolic Revelation in my deck. It's pretty sweet. Whenever you just like, you know, the deck's actually particularly sweet against like all the green decks that are really popular right now. You know, you just have like Mutilates and Black Sun Zeniths and a bunch of removal, and like Batter Skulls to hold the ground, and you know, just eventually kill all their shit, stay alive with Pristine Talismans, ramp your mana with Talismans and Solemn Simulacrums, then just play these, you know, super powerful cards.
Wow,
I've been tinkering a lot. The recent version is actually pretty good, I think.
It sounds more aggressive than the one I played. Yeah, it sounds like you're just like sticking it right there. Boom.
So are you going to be writing about it at any time soon?
I think I have an article that talks about it that goes up now-ish. So
nice.
In 5 minutes, folks. Well, I mean, yeah, it's already
up. Five minutes, you know, yeah, the time that we're actually recording this. But
yeah, or for you iPhone users, you can get it early if you subscribe to the app and have premium. Because they update at like 9.
Or Easter. If you can hack my computer, you can read it.
Right fucking now!
Man, if I'm hacking your computer, I'm not going to be reading your articles, bro.
Leave my porn alone.
Yeah.
Nope, nope. I'll be like, man, Brian Kibler is bi. No.
So Cedric Phillips, another Star City writer, good friend of the show. He was on a couple weeks ago. He spent a good 8 hours on, I guess it was a couple Thursdays ago on his stream, because he's streaming fairly regularly as well, like 3 days a week scheduled. And he was dicking around with this terrible, terrible, terrible fucking Bantpod deck that at first looked, you know, neat. But when you include Deadeye Navigator and Venser the Sojourner in your initial 60 cards, it's awkward. So we kind of went through 8 hours of watching him hammer this into a PTQ-winning deck. So he ended up taking down the online PTQ the following weekend, which is a couple weeks ago. So congratulations to him. I've been playing the shit out of it, and it is so much fun, I can barely contain myself. And Igo's getting really tired of playing Magic. So it's really nice to kind of have that fire back. But what I want to do is, if you'd play along with us here, Brian, we do this segment called Sneep Keeper Ditch, which I think is fairly self-explanatory. But basically, yeah, we are just going to decide if 7 cards, what we would do with them. So it's a Bantpod deck. It's just based on, you know, a lot of the really powerful interactions like Restoration Angel and Blade Splicer with Thragtusk and, you know, Mana Birds and Birthing Pod. And it's a lot of fun. So let's see what we've got here. So opening 7 cards, I have Avacyn's Pilgrim, Elvish Visionary, Borderland Ranger, Birthing Pod, Forest, and Gavinny Township.
Sneep.
Yeah. I think that's a sneak, yeah. All right, so let's do another one here. Razor Verge Thicket, Seachrome Coast, Forest, Hinterland Harbor, Blades Blesser, Restoration Angel.
Ditch.
Mm. Are you on the play or the draw? On the play, I probably keep that. On the draw, I got to get rid of it.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right, we'll do another one here.
Kibler plays a little loose, you know, just so you guys know.
I mean, it's not a great hand, but
no. But I mean, it's perfectly serviceable in a mid-range matchup.
Oh, you throw that shit back, you could get better, dude. Come on,
you probably won't.
So this one, I think, is Razor Verge Thicket, Hinterland Harbor, Plains, Bird of Paradise, Frost Titan, Geistarned Monk.
Yeah. Get that shit out of here.
I gotta shoot that shit.
Wait, what if you're on the play?
No, don't think. No, I don't think that matters.
What if you're on the play and you're playing Mono Black Control?
They'll have a Gristlebrand before I have anything.
All right, so we'll do one more here. Okay, get shuffled.
Apparently, this has shitty hands, I guess.
All right, so actually, this one's it's pretty good too. Razor Verge Thicket Island, Bird Pilgrim Visionary Sun Titan.
I'd keep that.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Like, you got 2 lands, right, which represent all your colors, plus 2 pilgrims and a bird. Elvish Visionary to, like, throw a guy on the ground and draw a card. And then Sun Titan at the top end. I mean, Sun Titan you don't want to see in your opening hand, but the rest of it's fine, right?
If there's no Visionary, I would ship it, but the Visionary...
Yeah, the Visionary gives you a little bit of you know, redraw. Because the hand overall is pretty bad. Your first play is, like, a Sun Titan. I mean, granted, your Sun Titan is coming to play pretty quickly, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so, like turn 4.
So for shits and giggles, next 2 draws, of course, are Borderland Ranger and Deceiver Exarch.
That's okay.
Well, you can untap your Sun Titan.
All these like singletons, you gotta love pod decks, right?
Oh man.
So anyways, it's been a crazy amount of fun. I recommend it, and it's been really, really neat for me. The sideboard's a lot of fun too, a lot of one-offs. Slayer the Wicked is actually just hilarious. I was playing, everybody and their mother was playing zombies. Fucking, they still play zombies today everywhere that I've been seeing lately. And just being able to play, you know, Phantasmal Image and pot up to that, pot up to the Slayer, drop it, and then just like copy and bounce and blink it all day is just hilarious.
Yeah, Slayer is definitely one of the cards that looks really cute in the deck, but I think is actually probably really good.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what I found too. Like at first, I looked at the sideboard, and Cedric was sort of the same way when he was going through stream. And you look at it and you go, It just does so much work, and it's at a really good spot in the curve as well for the pod. Mm-hmm. It's really sweet.
Yeah, it sounds pretty insane. I love the whole Restoration Angel Slayer or like Phantasmal Image Slayer business. Like, seems really good.
Yeah, and Thragtusk is like the is just dumb, right? Like so dumb.
Yeah, Thragtusk is stupid. Like,
yeah. So I'm surprised, Brian, that you're not playing Thragtusk. Like, that seems like it's a card you would love to play.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely built decks that include Thragtusk in them. But you know, I've been sort of trying to mess around with new ideas. Like, there's so many people on Magic Online right now who are playing, you know, various green decks that, you know, building the green deck that gets the advantage against the other green decks. You know, I actually think that my existing sort of Nyapod deck with Machias's ends up having a really good matchup against a lot of those. But I just wanted to try something else, you know?
Yeah.
It's actually sort of a reaction that I've gotten from a lot of people. It's like, what, you're not playing green? It's like, you know, I'm allowed to play with basic lands that aren't 4X. It's like, in a contract.
Who told you?
Yeah, it's, I have tendencies because, you know, I've had success with certain types of decks. But, you know, I am primarily looking for decks that will let me win more than anything else.
Fair. All right. KYT, what have you been playing?
I haven't been playing much since GB Columbus, sadly, so I've just been getting completely destroyed in M13 drafts, as John could see last night.
Oh,
I was trying,
man,
to set
that
up
was
the stream.
Worst. Dude, I told you to run the auger, dumbass. Anyways.
So you were streaming last night?
I was trying to, but apparently my mic, I still have to, like, tweak all the audio settings because Medina was trolling me all night.
Dude, it was abysmal. I go, KYT's like, I'm streaming, so I go on there, it's silent for like 25 minutes. I'm like, what the hell is going on here, KYT? Like,
this
get your
is
shit
not
together.
Streaming.
This is not streaming. I'm looking at like Windows folders. I'm not even looking at Magic. Like, and so he finally gets a sound and it's like in and out, and then he's making terrible picks and I'm like trying to justify him, and I'm just like, I suck at drafting, I suck at Magic in general, and I'm even saying like, this is not a good pick, like, what are you doing, dude? So I don't know, man. He's but it was fun to troll KYT at least in the draft experience.
Nice. Jay, what about you? You've been playing Magic lately or what?
Golf,
fucking
dude, you're fired. You're fired, man.
Yeah, I'm going to FNM tomorrow. I'm fired up about it. The problem is, this is the problem. When you start doing something that's more fun than Magic, which is a lot of things, then what happens is, especially if you start doing that around the time that a set comes out, you fall out of the loop. Like, I don't know what to play. I have like Ramp built. I assume that's fucking horrible. And I have Delver built. I don't know how Delver built beats a Thragtusk. So I don't know how to deal with that. And like, Avacyn Restored is the worst fucking format of all time. I hated that format. I'm sure Killer's just rolling his eyes, but I hated that format. So, you know, there's no motivation for me to play Magic at the time. So I've just been playing golf. Golf's awesome. I shot another 82. I'm the best at golf. I'm crushing 400 yards in the air. I'm the best. But I'm going to play FNM tomorrow. I'm sure I'm going to go like 05. I'm just going to play regular Delver and like, just kids with like bad mono green decks are just gonna run all over me because Vapor Snake just doesn't get rid of that Thragtusk at all.
And, or the Dungrove Elder.
Or the Dungrove Elder, yeah. So, you know, like, I might try that Talran deck again, but I really just haven't done any work with it, so I don't know. I don't know.
Run Misstep's main, dude.
Yeah, if I didn't know that this was a Canadian podcast before, I definitely know it now.
This is a Canadian podcast, by the way. I'm the only American here.
What did I do?
You talked.
Oh, man. Brad Kimmer doesn't like you, bro. You're fired.
I'm going to tell Jordy Tate about this.
Oh, man. So I've been playing Nyapod. And that's kind of like my personal deck, not my FM hero deck. Cause like, I decided that I need to alternate. I need to play like my regular deck with like foils and stuff. And then like play the FM hero deck, like maybe
in penny sleeves.
Yeah. Like I just need to like, cause the FM hero deck just gets really stressful cause I have to like win with it and I can't just play Magic. So like, I feel like sometimes to relieve that stress, I'll just play an FNM with like a real deck, so to speak. I mean, my FNM Hero deck is getting there. It's almost a real deck. Like, I want to play with Thragtusk, you know? I want to play with, you know, I want to play its mono black deck that Kibler's talking about. Like, I can't just, like, switch with FNM Hero, you know? So, instead, I could just, you know, play whatever deck I want, and then next FNM, play FNM Hero. So, yeah, so I've been playing the Niopod, and I've been playing, and I've been playing the FNM Hero deck, which is the Talrand Mono Blue Delver. And that deck's pretty sweet, man. Mono Blue Delver, Talrand deck. I think that I think there's some room to improve it, though. Like, I feel like the Talrands are really good against the green decks, because you just make an army of flyers and just race them. But I feel like in the mirror match, they're not that great. Like, you know, just gets vapor snagged or dismembered, and it's really hard to resolve it unless you have...
I find against control decks, too, like, they don't even care if you resolve it because they just wrath you, and then you don't have resiliency. Like, there's nothing you're doing after that, right?
Yeah, and you have the same problem with, like, bonfire decks.
Yeah.
It's like, because they're just, like, there's so many times where you're just, like, make these dudes, and then you're like, I hope he doesn't bonfire, I hope he doesn't bonfire, I hope he doesn't bonfire, you know? And
it's or just Terminus, like, or anything.
Yeah, so I feel like the deck needs to be tuned a little bit for that. Like, maybe I go two Talrands main, and then some other, like, stuff. Like, I don't know.
Oh, really?
And then, like, something else on the board for, like, when I play against... Yeah, I mean, the guy who commented was like, oh, are you saying to side Talrand out of the Delver deck? I'm like, yeah, dumbass. It's Delver deck. It's not a Talrand deck. Like, freaking A, man.
No, I just think it's funny that you're talking about, you know, like, making the Talrand deck a little bit more resilient when I was talking about that. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, we both agree. I mean,
I don't think we did agree last week.
Yeah, I agreed with you.
I don't think you did.
I just didn't agree with some of the stuff you're saying. It's just bullshit.
Yeah.
Like always. Like always.
So, Brian, I'm looking at your article because it just posted.
Uh-huh.
Like, this mono black deck, like, this is literally just one giant troll of the metagame, right?
That version is actually, like, since then I've made some improvements to it, actually. I was playing some more, you know, after I finished my article, and the Sorin's Vengeance package, I think, is actually not that exciting. I was trying that out. It's basically, I built the deck a lot around the sort of black-white Sorin's Vengeance Wrath deck that had been doing reasonably well prior to M13, but I wanted to try it with Mutilate, because Mutilate's act just awesome. And I decided that I wanted to move away from that sort of package and just into just big dominating cards like Griselbrand, Karn, and the Diabolic Revelation. So the version of that I've been messing with now is slightly different. It basically just doesn't have it has one less Sorin. It doesn't have any of the Vengeances, and it has, like, Karn, Diabolic Revelation, some Distresses. But it's still pretty similar. And I've been having a reasonable amount of success with it online. I mean, granted, I haven't really been playing, you know, in super competitive stuff, but I've been winning a lot more than I've been losing.
Wow. Yeah, like, 3 Black Sun Zenith, 4 Mutilate, main deck.
Yeah, I mean, against all of the green decks out there, you know, they play just like, dude, 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 and you're like, Mutilate you. Like, I played against a Bant Pod deck online, actually, at one point, and after sideboarding, I played a Massacre Worm, which killed, like, several of his things. They just kept playing more creatures, and just kept killing them all, and just killed him with Massacre Worm, life loss. Actually, at one point, he had, like, a Venser he was trying to protect, and he kept, like, blinking a Geistern Monk, and then he was, like, blocking my Vampire Nighthawk that was attacking him. He kept, like, losing 4 life every time, and then eventually he just, like, spit out a bunch of stuff on the board, and I'm like, Mutilate, lose 30.
Fuck. I do love a lot of the creatures that you're playing in the sideboard. Like, Nighthawk is so crazy good. Like, having that guy back is just hilarious. Masker Worm and Bloodline Keeper. Love Bloodline Keeper.
Yeah, Bloodline Keeper's sweet.
Yeah, so that's cool. But yeah, so you guys can check out the full details of the list on in Brian's article on and premium side of Star City. It's pretty cool. Alrighty, so I guess we can go to shoutouts then?
Mm-hmm.
Alright, so Jay... wait. No, don't we have something to do first before we go to shoutouts? Or are we going to
give away a Griselbrand?
Don't we have a foil Griselbrand to give away for insane comments that we got last week?
And yes, you can play this foil Griselbrand in that mono black control deck. Just
hey! Yeah. Brian, you should probably just, like, take a minute while we're going through this and just look at some of these. They're pretty funny. Our listeners are one of a kind. And actually, they're like 4,000 of a kind, which is pretty sweet.
4,000 people listen to us?
They listen to us. They don't listen to you.
Yeah, we actually... Jesus Christ. Yeah, we love our listeners. We actually get almost like 10,000 downloads a week. Like, it's insane. You guys are bonkers, and we love you.
Except for Robot Large. Fuck Except that for guy. Robot Large.
You ready for this?
You just don't like Robot Large because I'm Robot Large.
I don't like Robot Large because he's indecisive, man. He can't make up his mind whether he likes me or not.
He doesn't.
So, sup, Stevie, by the way. I just want to, like, give that guy a shout-out for this week because his comments were hilarious. They're, like, completely charged, but they were hilarious. Like, Robot Large is talking about KYT's tiny Asian dick for a free gristle brand, and Stevie goes, as for KYT, I took a piss in the urinal next to him, and he was rocking a legit rod. I could go for days just discussing the striations. Like, anyways, I thought it was
You guys
funny.
Are ridiculous.
Yeah, that's good. All right, so do we have a winner, or do we want to just read some out? Like, what do we got?
I just want to mention, I loved all the Medina hate that we got. This usually we get all this Medina, more Medina comments. So.
Like garbage.
But I really appreciate reading the hate.
Jay is turning the listeners against me, I think.
I'm not. You did it yourself by opening your mouth. You spread your saltiness, and the people don't like it. They don't like trans fats.
I don't care. I'm trolling him because I'm here every week. Suck it, guys.
No, you can be replaced.
Replace me then, bitch.
Taste it.
I will.
Taste it, Medina. Taste it.
Oh, man.
Anyways. All right, so what do we got?
So I have a winner, so I don't know if you guys want to read a bit before I reveal, like, who was randomly chosen.
I really like Mark Larson's comment. Was that on this episode, Scott?
Yeah, that's the Taste It Medina.
Yeah, I know it's Taste It, but I don't see it here.
So quotes. Most of the people there were just grinders there, you know? And not even just grinders. Sharks trying to rip you for whatever they can. It was gross, is the quote from Medina's last episode, right? As he was talking about the trading at GP Columbus.
Yeah.
So, of course, the response is, Taste It, Medina. Now you know what it feels like? This is your damn fault. If it weren't for you releasing your demons onto the community when you wrote for Star City, there would be, like, 95% less scumbag sharks in the community. I can't believe this guy. What a hypocritical, literal bag of scum.
Oh, Mike Larson, I'm going to kick your ass.
I'm not even sure what a literal bag of scum would look like.
Yeah. Oh, man. I picture it in a burlap sack. You know, and some of the scum is, like, coming out of the little, you know, the little burlappy stuff, you know?
Yeah. Now, the funniest part about this, of course, is I actually have a picture of Mark Larson asking Medina to sign his chest in Sharpie and it happening. So, like, we know where his heart really is, but it was really funny that he was able to spawn the phrase.
Oh, you have that picture? We should put it in the show notes.
That's a good idea. I have to email that to Kyle now. But yeah, it was literally, it tasted Medina. Taste.
Oh man, that was good. Releasing my demons. All right, KYT, who gets this foil gristle brand?
So the foil gristle brand goes to a longtime listener of ours who's been commenting for quite a while now. It goes to Fabulous. So congratulations to Fabulous for the foil gristle brand. I hope try out in Kibler's new deck.
Man, foil gristle brand, what's that worth? Like $40 right now?
Yeah, it was, and then, I guess it's still played in Legacy, right?
I mean, that card is just awesome.
Yeah, once they banned it in Commander, though, it, like, took a dip.
Foil yeah, Grizzle Brand, that's tight.
It's 50 on StarCityGames.com.
There you have it.
So it means it's, like, 30, right?
What does the Dragon Master say?
Kibler's like, no comment.
I love you, Pete!
I gotta read a comment.
I don't trade, I don't sell. You know.
whoa, wait a second. You're the one who warped the market on the fucking Daybreak Rangers, so don't tell me you don't trade or sell.
Did he stop doing it after that? Was that the breaking point for you, Brian?
The funny thing is that, like, I mean, I didn't, like, do that intentionally to sort of manipulate anything. I just, like, you know, like thought the card was going to be awesome because I thought the world was going to look like it did, you know, going into that set where, you know, there's a bunch of Birthing Pod and Tempered Steel decks and everything. And, you know, in that world, Daybreak Ranger is amazing. And, you know, I was like, oh, this card's going to skyrocket. I want to buy it. And it wasn't like, you know, know, intentional misleading, like, you know, insider trading stuff.
It was just
still
like
100. Is this the box of Daybreak Ranger? Oh, it's right here. you can actually hear me flip through my Daybreak Rangers.
You can sell those now, bro, by the way.
Yeah, it's probably okay to get rid of those.
Oh, man.
I'm way too lazy to speculate on Magic cards, I'll tell you that much. It's like, oh, well, what can I do with these? I guess I'll just sit here in this box.
You know what you should do? You should make a necklace out of them and then have it gold plate it.
I could do that.
That's what I would do.
If you could do that, you should really donate the $10,000 to...
Oh, man.
I know you want to be the top donor, man. You want to be the unique character.
Oh, I'd love to.
Top
love
donor, like a motherfucking boner.
It's too bad I don't have any money, dude. It's too bad I don't have any money.
So let's start. So, Brian, why don't you deliver us some shout-outs, man? Why don't you let us know who you want to shout-out to and say thanks to and give props to and all that crap.
All right, well,
crap. Take that back.
Cheerfully withdrawn.
I want to give a shout out to Natalie. If you do happen to watch this, you know, you hear me, you know, or watch this, listen to this, you get to hear me actually call you my girlfriend on air. So hi to you. shout out to everyone who has backed Soulforge so far. We've been thrilled with the response, and hopefully those of you who are listening now can go check it out and potentially chip in too.
Awesome. Anything else?
No, that's all I got.
All right. John?
All right. Brian, thanks for coming on and just being a good sport, you know, as we ask you all the, I guess, not so controversial questions. And yeah, I just want to give a shout out to Brian and Soulforge. Sounds pretty awesome. I'm going to definitely check it out. I'm not going to give $10,000, but I will be a backer.
Cheapskate.
I know. I'm such a cheapskate. Oh, man. So, you bastards. Just shout out to all the fans who've been leaving comments. You guys are awesome. Even the guys who say Les Medina. I think that's great that you guys are listening every week. Damn it. I had all kinds of shout outs, man, and now they're just going down the tubes. Let me look at my Twitter real quick. Okay, yeah, I'm not going to look through his Twitter. There's a bunch of people on here. So, yeah, just shout out to... That's it, man. That's it. I got to... Peace out, guys.
All right, Jay.
Oh, it's me now.
Yeah.
Garbage. All right. Shout out to Brian Killer. Thank you for coming on the show, finally. I enjoyed listening to you, Doc. And, shout out to Cedric Phillips winning the PTQ. Yeah, buddy. Shout out to Andrew Wagner, who I think I've shouted out before, but he's really funny when he says things like, I also feel like pointing out how Jay trashed the hell out of Rune Chanter's Pike, and now it's one of the key pieces and one of the best decks in the format. Suck it, Boosh. Because I still think it's a bad card, and it's not now one of the key pieces in one of the best decks because it's been around for a long time. I think Andrew Wagner needs to just jump on the DeLorean there and figure that shit out. Who else we got a shout out to? Oh, man, Nick Peterson. Not Pedersen.
Peterson.
Nick Peterson. He had the foils have arrived, and he started foiling up my booze cube for me. So thank you very much. And shout out to Fabulous for winning your Grizzle brand.
Yep.
Pretty good. And shout out to Kevy Metal and Sup Stevie for just trashing this Brian guy who just came on he listens to the show, which is like 2 hours long. I'm sure Brian can relate with this. Brian Kibler, I'm sure he can relate to this. So you spend like 2 hours of your time like listening to a show, and then you jump onto the forums just to like trash that show and ask questions like, why in the world does anybody like this person? So I just got a big shout out to it's me that he's talking about.
Okay.
But shout out to Stevie and Kevy Metal for I guess, I don't know, being white knights and defending my honor. I appreciate that. And shout out to Brian with a Y, which is cool. I don't know if I got any other shout outs. Shout out to KYT for coining the meme This Is Why, and everybody knows why. And I love you. And shout out to Fast Fast Games, because I just got paid.
Oh, man. KYT, you have shout outs?
Thanks, Brian, for being on the show. I was one of those guys that were really excited to play someone like you. I got a chance to play against you at GP Montreal. You crushed me. And it was pretty cool to play a bunch of matches against you before GP Columbus when you sat down and just like wanted to battle with your Doran deck. So that was pretty cool.
You crushed me there.
So. Hey, you said it was a great game one matchup for me. So
oh, it was for sure.
And I don't believe that. So, but thanks for being on, because I know you've mentioned multiple times you just never have time to do podcasts, and it's great to have you on.
Shit. Wait, I have to interrupt you. Speaking of shout outs to Brian Kibler, Mark Mercier says hello.
Oh, hey, Mark.
And shout outs to Mark Mercier for knowing Brian Kibler.
Isn't it?
Wow.
That's how sweet. No, I just wanted to see if he claims that you know him as a person.
Yeah, and I know him from Elitist Jerk.
Yeah, and I was sort of there to witness you speaking to him. And then as such, I was like, man, that's cool that you know Brian Kibler. And he's like, whatever. And then so I wanted to see if you actually knew him or not.
Yeah,
or
I was like, save Matt, not Mark. So
shout out to Mark. Go ahead, KYT, you can finish.
Yeah, last shout out to Joshua Lamesh, always such a devoted fan, and you know, is basically saying he'll have another stroke if I don't get considered for the Community Cup. So, shout out to that guy. Even though
you can't keep threatening the stroke, Josh,
the stroke card.
You listen, you can't at keep some point in time, card. Somebody's gonna call, right?
Like, yeah. And then you just die.
We have to save him.
I have one more shout out that I forgot.
Go ahead.
It's this guy, Tor Tutor, Chad Havis.
Torero Tutor, yeah. Yeah.
You know that guy?
Yeah. He has played in NSCG and he's a Twitterite. Yep.
Yeah.
Actually, no, he's local.
No, so there you go.
Oh, is he really? Okay, yeah, cool. Yeah, I think he's a cool guy. I want to give him a shout out. I was starting up some controversy about Magic Finance writing, and then he asked me for some feedback on one of his articles, and I gave him an earful, and he was a good sport about it. So I kind of was like really busy.
He's like a pretty reasonable guy, so.
Yeah, I feel a little bit bad because I was super busy today, and like as I was battling out on Twitter, we kind of got into it, and so like I just like bring the full hammer down on his article. And I didn't do it in public, obviously, but he was a really good sport about it, and he was really reasonable. So give him a shout out for that. You can check him out on quietspeculation.com on the premium side.
All right, KYT, are you done your shout outs?
Yeah, I'm done.
All right, so shout out to Carrie Dan for doing a fantastic job of editing our podcast. Shout out to Brian, man, fucking so awesome that you actually came on. That was wicked. It's like we keep pitching out asks, oh yeah, come on, and just never an answer, and then this time it was just like out of the blue, bang, it's happening. Fucking like top shelf of you, dude. So
yeah, thanks
good.
For not blowing us off this time.
Yeah, it was really good. And like, and I'm not backhanded commenting you there. Like, I really do appreciate, you know, you being up front and candid saying, yep, I'm in, let's fucking do it. Bitchin'. So good luck on the stream and of course on the Soulforge endeavor. You guys should all make sure you check that out. And, Christine's quite serious. She does have a Kickstarter to fuel the Kickstarter. So,
oh, I saw. I've retweeted her post about it. So.
Yeah. So if you guys want to do that, that's totally cool as well. So, so shout out to her. And I think it was, Revised Angel that got it started as well. She kind of said, yeah, you should totally do that. So shout out to the ladies for getting their shit together.
Ladies!
I don't really know what else I can say after that. That's hilarious.
That's hilarious.
That's pretty good.
Hi, Bob. That was hilarious.
That was hilarious. I'll shout out to Maddie Studios because he was like almost more excited about this episode than we were. No, probably definitely. Shout out Fab Obvious. He recently had a second baby as well. So, you know, like, not only does he get the Foil Gristle brand, but he also has more children. So that's awesome for him. Shout out to Robot Large. And I think that's about it for me for tonight, guys. So, awesome show. Tune in next week when we have likely no guest, and we yell at each other belligerently until somebody says shut
Medina.
Up.
I dare you. I dare you, Jay.
I fucking dare you.
You dare me. You don't have any fucking dirt on me, you bitch.
All right. So with that, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, have a great night, and hopefully you enjoyed the show. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Later, guys.
Bye-bye.
Buzz ladies.